I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Stream Police Podcast is brought to you by OverdueReview.com. Want something more in-depth than a sarcastic, pretentious, 140-character review of your favorite movie? Read long-form reviews of movies, TV, and music from the distant and recent past at OverdueReview.com.
It is another fun-filled edition of the Stream Police Podcast, this time a little bit different. I am joined in the room by my co-host and friend, Andy Sedlak, music editor at Overdue Review.
Oh my God, look, it is so good to be here. Big round of applause from the studio audience.
Seriously,
no
applause light or anything, folks. I mean, that's... We're also, at the same time as we're recording this, we're Facebook Living. And
right.
Is that, I guess, how you say it? Facebooking Live? I'm not sure.
We are dial it into the Facebook Live.
We are.
Something that I've never... Have you ever used it?
Never used it.
We're trying to...
I've never had a real reason to use it.
Yeah,
I mean, what do I do?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't do anything either.
What do people want to watch me do?
I don't think...
Editing a video that I made about my review of a James Bond movie from 35 years ago.
Check out this Facebook Live video of me writing an article.
Exactly.
For OverdueReview.com.
Thrilling stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Thrilling stuff.
So, yeah, we've never done it, but we're going to do it now. We're going to try to give you a... behind-the-scenes look at the Stream Police Podcast, which is available on iTunes. It's available on the Acast app, which is free to download. Are they still paying us?
They haven't paid us a red cent, but
they haven't paid us.
They do air some ads, but we don't. I guess we don't have enough listeners to get any advertisements.
Right,
isn't that sad?
Yeah, we rack up a few of these listeners, and you know, all of a sudden, watch that money roll in, baby.
Well, dude, look how many viewers we've got on. We found out we have our most viewed video ever.
Oh, I gotta go back to it. I switched the screen.
And bring that camera up a little bit so people can see us.
That tells you how much I've used it. Like I'm not even looking at the screen. We have got. Let's see. Yeah, we lost one. We're losing our audience. Audience is cut in half. We went from 2 to 1.
That's because you're not showing us.
Yeah.
You're going to have to, like, set it up over there.
Well, I need to look at my phone for...
Oh, for your notes.
Yeah. Yeah, for notes.
See, it's just not... That's not good.
Yeah.
All right, so...
So there's Andy.
We're here on the Stream Police Podcast. Yes. Usually I light my stogie up right now, but I can't do it because of fire code issues here.
Yeah.
Like I said, we're in our downtown Cincinnati precinct. We're not at the library this time, actually. This time, we're at the beautiful, lush Scripps Center.
And let me – he's not embellishing. I mean, this is a really nice place.
It's lush.
That's a good word for it. Yeah. I mean, how many floors in this joint?
35 floors.
35 goddamn floors in this
place.
We're
on the 29th, so we're up there.
Man. We're way up there. So he just showed me his office, and he's got a view overlooking Great American Ballpark. He sees the beautiful Ohio River. It's pouring down rain right now, but on a nice day, my God, it's got to be, what more do you want?
So
Heaven on earth.
I thought it was a good place for the Stream Police to broadcast their second joint episode in.
Right.
How many episodes have we done? This is our 44th episode overall.
Is that true?
It's 44. So we do an episode together once every 22 episodes, basically, is how that works. But that's what keeps it special.
That's
so.
Right, yeah. You know, it's funny. I mean, do you think, how has this podcast, and we haven't even begun our actual podcast, we're just BSing right now, but how has this podcast changed or grown or matured over the course of 44. I don't know if people realize we've done 44 episodes.
Which at first they were every couple weeks.
Yeah.
And then we dialed it back to about once a month because I felt like I was getting to a point where I was like repeating myself a lot and I didn't want to do that. Like talking about the same shows over and over. I'm not one of the, like, I don't like how TV reviews are done. Like critics will watch three episodes of a show.
Right.
And then they'll say, here's my review of the first season of this show. And it's like, no, that's your review of the first three episodes of this season. I mean,
right.
Shows change so much over a season. I'm one of these guys that likes to review I like to review a show after I've watched the whole series. I don't even like to do it season by season because they change so much. Again,
it's not complete. You're reviewing something that is incomplete.
Exactly. Would I watch 30 minutes of a movie and then here's my review of the movie? I mean,
right.
Come on.
Right. That's true. I mean, you don't review a movie a half hour at a time.
No. You don't review a record, you know, just, you could do it track by track, but you got to get the whole thing, too,
absolutely.
At the end.
Yeah.
So.
How do you know the point of the art until you've finished it?
Exactly.
You bring up a good point because even as they're making these episodes, you're right, it is kind of goofy to review individual episodes because I don't think a lot of these shows, the episodes are meant to stand on their own.
No.
They're meant to add up to a collective whole.
They're not the Twilight Zone.
Well, you know
what I'm saying?
True.
I mean, we're not in and out every episode, a whole new
cast,
whole
new
show.
Yeah, new director, new, you know.
If it's that kind of, if it's like a Black Mirror kind of thing, you can do it. But I just I don't like it. So that's why I was like, let's do the show once a month.
Sure.
Because I don't want to keep talking about the same things over and over again, and I think it's worked out pretty well. We've been having a good time, and it's fun. By the way, I'm Clint Davis, TV and movie editor at Overdue Review, and as I said, this is Andy Sedlak.
In the same room.
Great
brother.
To see you, brother.
Yeah.
And by the way, usually this is the point in the show where I do the vastly popular they love it overseas.
Yeah.
The segment, the greatest TV show theme song of all time, this week.
Right.
But I thought. Yeah. Since we're going to be in the room together, and since you're the music guy,
right,
I want you to pick the greatest TV show theme song of all time this week.
Okay, we can do that. Let me, I was honored, quite frankly, when you asked me to pick the greatest TV show theme song of all time this week. I thought, Jesus, that is...
I don't offer that to a lot of people.
Partner?
I give that chance to a lot of people.
Let me... I wept. I called home, you know.
That's too much.
I called my wife and I said, you'll never guess. So the pressure was on, in other words, to come up with the greatest TV show theme song of all time this week. And
it's a catchy title, too.
It rolls off the tongue. So go back with me to the fall of 1999. All right. Bill Clinton is president. Bubba's president. Lance Armstrong just won his first Tour de France. And Star Wars Episode I was well on its way to become the highest grossing film of that year.
The best of all the Star Wars films.
By far. And every Wednesday night at 9 p.m., not on DVR later, not on Netflix whenever you freaking felt like it, but every Wednesday at 9 p.m., viewers tuned in to hear this. It is the theme from The West Wing.
Oh, man.
The actual title is... The West Wing opening theme. The whole thing, it's a beautiful score. It's a beautiful theme. It won W.G. Snuffy Walden an Emmy Award in 2000.
Why do I know W.G. Snuffy Walden? Tell me.
Let me tell you. Right. Let me tell you. But this theme's so, God. Majestic, right? It's the best word for it, majestic. It stirs our souls, inspiring. The stuff dreams are made of. It's the sound of triumph and grace and righteous patriotism. The theme's composer, William Garrett Walden, or W.G. Snuffy Walden. made his bones, Clint, playing in a place that wasn't so majestic and rarely triumphant, a strip club.
That's great.
Can you hear that? Can you hear that theme? Can you hear that score at, well, I don't know. I've never been to one, but, you know.
I know you never have. Diamonds, though, is one.
Okay. All right. Okay. I looked this up. He put himself through college playing guitar at a strip club and hosting a late-night radio show in Houston.
You know, there are worse ways to make a living than that, right? That sounds like a pretty good life.
Sounds like our kind of guy.
Wait, when was the radio show? At night also?
It was at night,
so
yeah.
He's got to work at the strip club at night. He's not working during the day at the strip club.
Well, I guess he's, you know.
So by night he's playing at the strip club, and by night he's doing a radio show.
I think he probably had two part-time jobs, on the evening.
Sure.
He was either at the club or he was in Houston underground somewhere spinning records. Walden, given the nickname Snuffy while away at summer camp one year, and eventually Snuffy went on to back up Eric Burdon of the Animals, Stevie Wonder, and even Donna Summer. He was in a band for a little while called the Stray Dogs. They did nothing, so eventually he began scoring TV shows. He was quoted as saying he saw the writing on the wall. They weren't selling any tickets. They weren't selling any albums. He said, I gotta do something. Or else it's the Holiday Inn Express Lounge for me.
Could say a lot about W.G. Snuffy Walden, but not that he was stupid.
No. So listen to some of the TV shows he worked on. The Wonder Years. Roseanne. Ellen, the sitcom. Sports Night. Friday Night Lights. And My So-Called Life. Without a doubt, though, his work on The West Wing is the high point in his career. He cut a version of the opening theme on an acoustic guitar, and he put out an album. As far as I can tell, I looked. This album came out in 2001, and it looks like it's the only record he ever released under his own name. But it was just acoustic guitar versions of all the themes that he had worked on.
You need to get that one on vinyl. That's the next, I think, great conquest for you.
So, there it is. You know, it's funny because, like, to this day, you know, the West Wing theme, it is just a landmark recording. You know, whenever I feel accomplished or when I feel like I've made it through, like, a little bit of trench warfare or, you know, some other pain in the ass thing, I'll hear like the theme from West Wing in the back of my mind. It's literally appropriate for all occasions, though I have my doubts that it would sound good in a strip club. That, my friend, is the greatest TV show theme song of all time this week.
West Wing thing by W.G. Snuffy Walden. I'm picturing a young, and nice job, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm glad I gave it to you. You did a nice job.
Thank you, my friend.
It was well written. It got me stirred up. I had to wipe tears away.
Yeah. I mean, that's
three times during that part. I had to wipe tears away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm picturing W.G. Snuffy Walden, a young man at this strip club, playing, noodling around on his guitar, playing whatever they, you know, kind of music. No, like you said, neither of us, we've never been to these kind of places, so I don't know what kind of music they play.
Sure.
But it's safe to say it's probably not the kind of stuff they play on the West Wing. And I'm imagining in his head he's got this West Wing theme that will eventually become that. He's got it in his head, like parts of it.
Yes.
And he knows that someday, if he ever gets the chance to really sit down and write a good piece of music, he's got this drive.
Right.
This presidential song in his head, and it finally came out one day.
It clicked.
That's inspirational, man.
It is inspirational.
I think I know his name from, because it's a great name. Sports Night was one of my favorite shows.
I love Sports Night, and it's funny. I remember watching Sports Night, and I was, you know, a youngster at the time.
We were young.
That was a Sorkin series, and I thought it was just a terrific play on the ESPN culture.
Yeah.
And what is her name? What's the girl? What is her?
Felicity Huffman.
Felicity Huffman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, gosh.
And William H. Macy.
William H. Macy.
That's where they met, I think,
yeah.
was that.
Yeah.
On that set.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really good show. But I know his name also, I think, from Roseanne. I'm not sure if he did the theme song, but I remember seeing that name in the opening credits. Because Roseanne was one of my favorite shows ever,
too. Oh, yeah,
too.
Yeah.
And I probably have seen every episode of Roseanne just over time. And I remember that because you can't forget that name.
No.
W.G. Snuffy Walden. So as soon as you said it, I'm like, man, what show do I know him from?
But and I love seeing...
probably Sports Night and Roseanne.
Yeah, I love seeing that name juxtaposed against, like, the American flag.
That's pretty cool, too.
And, you know, the like I say, just this majestic, you know, piece of music that is so just, you know, inspiring. And he's just got, like, the weirdest name. It's just... It's just felt
oddball.
Cool. Yeah, it just felt... Yeah. Right, you know.
That's kind of cool, man.
Yeah.
Good pick.
Thank
good
you.
Pick. So there
Thank
you go. The greatest TV show theme song of all time this week. The West Wing theme. They're adding a little class to that segment here on the show. I like that. So let's get into some other more serious topics here, Andy. In the days before we recorded this show, literally like a day before we recorded this show, and I don't want to encroach on you because you'll probably talk about him just a little bit, but I just wanted to mention Chris Cornell. I don't know. Do you have anything? Are you going to talk about Chris Cornell?
Well, I was going to. Yeah, a little bit. I was going to touch on it, but you go ahead.
I just wanted to say that he was one of those guys that I always thought just had one of the most, like, unimaginable voices, just like a voice that was otherworldly, you know? And I think words like, oh, he's an incredible singer. He's one of the great singers. Those kind of compliments get thrown around a lot by a lot of people for a lot of singers. But I feel like Chris Cornell really earned it. I remember hearing the description of his voice one time. I cannot remember who said it.
Yeah.
Somebody said that his voice could peel the paint off of walls. And they meant it in a great way. Like that, not that it's so annoying it would peel the paint off the walls, but that it was that powerful. And I've always thought of that when I think of Chris Cornell.
Right.
Just him ripping these high notes out, just stretching them out, and not sounding like cheesy. Like, he didn't have one of those voices, like those lead singer voices, like 80s glam metal kind of things.
Yeah.
It all just sounded like so raw, powerful.
Well, it was a weird, beautifully weird combination of range and grit, which you don't get very often. If you have a gritty voice, you typically don't have a lot of range.
Yeah.
But if you have a lot of range, typically you have a very clear, somewhat of a pristine voice. You don't have that grit.
Sure.
And he somehow checked both boxes, and that was totally rare. You know, you just don't hear that a lot.
And we were talking before about the fact that Cornell was not – I mean, most guys, if you're in one good band, like – that is a career. Like, you know how many musicians struggle out there? I mean, any bar in Cincinnati, you know, that we're in right now recording this, there's a million bars, there were a million bands out there playing at different bars, and every one of them is hoping to make it big. But Chris Cornell was part of three different bands that were critically loved, they sold well, now Temple of the Dog only did the one record, but it was still, like, it's still considered one of the great grunge albums.
Right.
And reinventing sounds, and the guy was just like, he was a part of some really good projects.
Right.
Some projects you could be proud of.
Well, absolutely. We were talking about it. I mean, I think, you know, any one of those bands today could headline a festival.
Yeah.
And they were all also very different.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
And we're talking about Soundgarden, Audioslave, and Temple of the Dog,
Temple of the Dog,
the way, if you didn't know his career very well.
Yeah. So they were all just, you know, they weren't just sort of different versions of the same band. I mean, the writing was different. The vocal, I mean, the whole approach to these things, they were actually different, as if they actually had a reason for forming another band, you know? And then
not just to make money.
Right. And they kind of found their own identity when they did that, you know, and that you just don't come across that very often.
Cornell's voice was the common link, obviously, between those. But I was just so sad, and I was shocked to hear that he had died, and then obviously to hear that he had committed suicide. I mean, it was one thing that he had died. Shocking enough.
Right, yeah.
And I had just seen the guy. I mean, I'm telling you, I think it was 3 weeks ago. I watched CBS Sunday Morning. It's one of my favorite shows.
So do I. Yeah, we watch it every every weekend.
Yeah. And he performed. He was like their music guest, I think like 3 weeks ago, and he did a couple acoustic. He did an acoustic version of Black Hole Sun, and I think he did a record from his new solo project that had just come out. And he sounded great. They did a little interview with him. I mean, he wasn't like bubbly. I wouldn't expect that, you know, from a grunge rock icon. But
he was always always very articulate in interviews. Sure. I mean, he was always a very – you could tell he was an intelligent guy, real sharp.
And he
dude.
Wasn't one of those guys like Lane Staley from Alice in Chains or, you know, Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains.
Right.
Any of these guys who like had issues with heroin and stuff like that. You never heard about that with Cornell. I think he had alcohol – he battled alcoholism, but – you know, who didn't when they were in rock music as a profession. But
I never
heard of him being like a like having to go to rehab and being a big drug addict or anything like that. So I was really shocked when I had
read about depression.
Yeah.
But that at the same time, I mean, depression in an artist isn't necessarily uncommon.
No, not at all.
In fact it may
be pretty common,
a necessary ingredient.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, this the form and fashion was just outrageous.
And they were scheduled to, you know, Soundgarden was on tour. They were going to be headlining a festival that's actually going on as we speak in Columbus, Ohio.
Not far from here.
So just a really shocking story and very sad. And it was one of those that, like, people can be really cold, too, and brutal. And it's like, well, he killed himself. You know, who cares? But, I mean, it's terrible. I mean, this was a guy that was a legitimate artist, gave us some of the best music of the 90s, and then came back again with Audioslave and gave us some really, you know, just really good straight-ahead rock music.
Just good beat-up rock. You know, just that good, just that rock music just sounded just kind of worn in and durable.
It sounded edgy enough.
It sounded edgy enough.
It didn't sound too commercial. It wasn't like Nickelback kind of thing.
No, but if you go back and listen to Audioslave now, it does not sound dated.
No, not at all. It still sounds pretty cool.
Right.
And I don't think anyone really sounded like them still since. I don't think anybody really sounded like Soundgarden either. I mean, listen to Black Hole Sun especially.
Well, yeah.
And no one has really done a song that sounds like that still.
Yeah.
It was just so foreign.
Right.
Especially compared to like Nirvana. It just didn't sound like anything they were doing. But... Just a great singer. I mean, what can you say? And it's a real loss, I think, because he was still working and he was still, you know, he was still out there. He was writing music and he was performing solo. He was back with his band again. I think they were going to do a Temple of the Dog reunion. So fans miss out on a lot of good music that was going to come. So I'm sure we'll get the deluge that we always get when an artist dies of like recorded unreleased stuff. But we're not going to get anything new from Chris Cornell, and that's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, the dude was a prolific artist, and we've talked about this before. How there's a difference between artists and entertainers.
Yeah,
right. He was an artist, you know. I mean, he didn't exist for the sole purpose of just entertaining.
Yeah,
you know, it was a little bit more than that, and that's. Frankly, kind of hard to find.
Those are the guys that we miss the most, obviously. I wanted to ask you an interesting question I was kind of thinking about. Now, the show The Voice on NBC, very popular show.
It's funny you mentioned that. I had never watched 5 minutes of The Voice until we recently cut cable. And so, you know, the basic channels are kind of on, you know, and we don't watch them a lot, but every now and then they just sort of find their way to be on in the house. And so we watched like a couple episodes of The Voice. I watched for the first time.
I watched it here and there. I really haven't watched it very much, but I don't want to talk about the actual show. I just wanted to say that when the show came out, I remember it coming out and hearing about it, and the show's called The Voice, right?
The Voice, yes.
And so the first guy I think of when I think of the Voice is Steve Perry, because that was his nickname, The Voice.
Right.
Everybody called him The Voice. And I was thinking about, like, my favorite singers and, like, the guys who I really think of when I think of The Voice and, like, what my dream panel of judges would be. Like, forget about the commercialization of the show.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
Don't think of people who they would never do it because it's on TV. Yep. Forget about that. We're talking about anyone. Yep. You can have anyone be a judge on The Voice. You get four judges who are, like, the singers that you think really embody that. And Chris Cornell is a guy that I always think of as the first guy. If I think of, like, a rock singer that I think would be a good judge on a show like that because he has that kind of voice.
Yeah.
Chris Cornell, first guy I always think of. Luther Vandross is probably my number two guy.
Yeah.
I would probably put Steve Perry on there because I don't think anyone sounds like him. He's a little bit played out at this point, but it's just, I mean, the voice was so effortless. So effortless.
It was, yeah.
And he's such a mystery. And I don't want to leave the women out. I was like, when I was thinking about this, I'm like, for some reason, thinking of only men, but I would put Darlene Love, I think, on there too.
God,
so
yes.
Powerful.
Yeah.
She's got a great personality too, but forget about the personality, just the voice herself. And someone who had to stand in the shadows and sing for so long before she got any recognition.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So those would probably be my four.
You know, with Darlene Love does that nice thing of R&B. She's an R&B vocalist, but can also sing rock music.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's a pretty dynamic combination. Wow. Who would I select?
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah,
it's a tough question.
I mean, I would select Bob Dylan.
Really?
I would select Bob Dylan.
I mean, certainly one of the most,
probably
the most unique voice of all time.
And if you're going to get feedback, can you imagine how interesting that feedback could be? You know, if you sing a song for Bob Dylan and you ask him, okay, I don't want to hear anything other than what do you think of my voice?
Yeah.
That could be somewhat interesting.
It could probably be devastating. You know what I mean? He would kill a lot of singers, I think. He would kill a lot of self-esteem.
Let me ask you this, and I'll give you my other three here in a second after I think about it. But let me ask you this. What makes a good voice to you?
I don't think there's
I'm not asking you to define it.
Sure.
Because that definition will change every time you hear somebody new that you like. You know, it's a fluid definition. But right now, in this present moment, how would you describe what is a good voice?
It's such a lame thing to say that you know it when you hear it, but I think that's really the case when you're talking about voices. But for me, if you look at the four people that I picked, and especially if I think about Luther Vandross, who to me is the most effortless singer ever. I mean, the guy it never sounded like he was trying.
Right.
And Steve Perry's the same way, I think. He just sang and it was just automatically brilliant.
Right.
Which is probably underselling how much work he put into it. But I feel like, what I mean? Like, he'd probably take insult to that.
Yeah,
but I feel like you just, it needs to be effortless, is the thing for me with singing. Like, I don't want to feel like you have, whereas with musicianship, I think a lot of times, the more effort you put into it, it kind of is better.
Yeah.
When you see a guy who's a real, like, virtuoso, who tries, who has obviously learned the craft,
who's
a true technical, you know, player.
It sounds like what you're listening for is a gift, right?
Sure, yeah.
It's not necessarily something it's not necessarily something you pick up on the week in, week out work of making sure your voice sounds.
Just somebody who, just when I hear it, I know it's just smooth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't sound like they're trying.
Right.
I don't know.
Sam Cooke.
Cool. Oh, man,
like
Sam Cooke.
I mean,
it's hard to keep him off the list.
Yeah,
too,
I mean, for my money, maybe my favorite, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, oversell it, but one of my favorite pure singers.
He's way up there for me too. Yeah, so good. Yeah,
sing. You know, listen to him all day. So I would, if I had to choose four people to put on my own little voice panel, you know, of judges, I would select Bob Dylan because I do think he redefined what a good voice was.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know,
there's still people that maintain that he didn't have a good voice, though. People always say that.
They will say that, and I think you have to broaden that definition. I was reading an interview with who was it? I think it was with Tom Petty, and it was basically the gist of the quote, to paraphrase, was that, you know, he was talking about what makes somebody a good singer, and the answer was whether you believe what the vocalist is saying. Do you believe it? You know, are they convincing? Are they convincing in their reading of the lyric?
That's where you get a guy like B.B. King or something.
That's where you get a guy like B.B. King.
So believable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you feel like he had crawled over cut glass
before
he sang that song.
Yep.
So I would select Bob Dylan. You know, I would probably select James Brown.
Hard to argue with.
Yeah. I mean, just talk about, you know.
And if you want a showman.
A full body vocal work, you know, I mean, every part of his being, you know, went into the vocal, you know. who else would I select? I've always really liked a guy, and a lot of people haven't heard of him, and it's a shame, but a guy named Willie DeVille, who was...
I don't know him.
Yeah, he was in a band. They were actually the house band at CBGB's for a while, back in the day. And he sort of had that mix of range and grit that we were just talking about with Chris Cornell, only his band, called Mink DeVille, they were sort of like, okay, I'm gonna throw this description at you, and you're not gonna be able to picture it, but just hang with me here. It's kind of a mix between the Raspberries and the Drifters, and it sounds.
That's wild.
I know that sounds goofy.
Sounds like a good band though.
It's a great band. So check them out. A band named Mink DeVille. The lead singer is a guy named Willie DeVille. Always one of my favorite. I just love the way he sings, and he does have that naturalness to his vocal, but he's also got that kind of that hard driving rock vocal as well.
Sure.
So what am I up to? I'm up to three now.
You got
right?
three already.
Okay. Yeah, Darlene Love is a good one. That's a good one.
That's what I'm saying. And we maybe. Both of us have already. So we both put three men on our panel, and I think that's probably because I was just thinking about it, and I'm like, I don't know why I'm thinking, because clearly when I think of like great singers, I do think of a lot of women also.
I mean, Aretha Franklin would obviously be a very.
Fantastic voice.
She would know what
Tina
she's
Turner
talking about.
For raw Tina power alone.
Tina Turner might be okay. That might be my final judge. That
she's
might
pretty
be.
Tough. Could you imagine James Brown and Tina Turner on the same judging panel? Like I don't.
And Bob Dylan.
Seriously. I think they would overshadow Dylan.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, it wouldn't take much to drown out Dylan.
True. I almost expected you to take Huey Lewis. I know you like his voice.
I do like Huey Lewis.
And I was thinking of Southside Johnny, maybe.
No, too. He's a phenomenal voice. Just for the sake of, I'm trying to move around a little bit. Obviously, Dylan and James Brown are very different. You've got Willie DeVille.
That's kind of what I was trying to go for, too. A little R&B, a little rock.
Tina Turner's great. I feel like you should probably have a blues vocalist in there. What you should probably do, if you're talking about just uniqueness in voice, because ultimately that's what you want to find, right, is somebody who has a unique vocal. You don't necessarily want, in anything in life, I don't think you want cookie cutter necessarily. You know, if it's going to be special, it cannot be cookie cutter. So I think you need... You need folks that have a unique voice. I would go. Why wouldn't you go with a guy like Tom Waits, or why wouldn't you go with a guy like Howlin' Wolf?
I almost feel like if you have Dylan already, though, then you got that base covered. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like it'd be hard to justify Dylan and Waits, being on there at the same time because they were kind of that same deal. Like they both had the very strange. Waits has such a weird voice,
and he went through phases.
So polarizing.
Yeah, he went through phases where.
Yeah.
Each phase was, his voice would be radically different from
for
the
sure.
phase that,
same for
that
Dylan.
Preceded. Yeah, well, that's true, too.
Just
that's
complete
true.
Vocal changes several times in his career. But, and I think of guys like Stevie Ray Vaughan. I love his voice. Again, so effortless. I believe every word he says. The guy, I swear to God, before I ever saw Stevie Ray Vaughan, definitely pictured a black guy every time I heard him singing. And I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
I just thought when I heard that voice... I just was picturing this, and probably because he plays blues, and pretty much everybody in blues is black, but I just pictured a black guy singing his songs, and I saw Stevie Ray Vaughan. I'm like, that's not Stevie Ray Vaughan. Like, that's the bassist for Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I always Dion and the Belmonts.
Sure,
we had
voice,
that great
smooth.
Voice, great voice, and I always loved John Lennon's voice.
I did too, man.
I love John Lennon's
voice.
I love Mick Jagger's voice. For what we're talking about, the Stones, I always loved Keith Richards' voice, who had absolutely no range. He more or less talked through his songs, but still was convincing when he would do it.
And we were talking about Jamie Johnson before also. Again, one of my favorite, most natural voices as well. And you think about singers like Adele.
Oh, true.
Who can just kill you with her voice. Just an unbelievable voice.
Hank Williams had a good voice.
Also a very
good
voice. Yeah. So, I mean, if you got the gamut, it's tough to pick four singers. But
Marty Stewart had a great voice. I love Marty Stewart.
And he's great.
Come on.
But I think the voice always disappointed me because of their judges, because I was always kind of like, with the exception of Christina Aguilera, who I do feel like has one of those voices that stops you when you hear it, stops you in your tracks. I never felt like they really had, like, the best singers. I'm kind of like, you know, the Maroon 5 guy's all right. He's got a unique voice, but I never thought he was, like, one of the greatest singers. Blake Shelton, I've never heard anyone say they thought he had a great singing voice, like one of the all-time great country music, you know, voices.
No.
He's not that guy. Like, he's like a Vince Gill. Vince Gill would be a great selection for the voice. He's a charismatic guy, too. And like Miley Cyrus, they have on Alicia Keys, great singer.
Alicia
Keys,
I'd put her on there. Yeah, she's a good vocalist. I mean, why wouldn't you put, you know,
Pharrell Williams may be close too.
Pharrell, why wouldn't you put a guy, and Pharrell's close, but why wouldn't you put a guy like The Weeknd on?
Oh man,
you know, I mean, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you put a guy
angelic voice?
Why wouldn't you in? I'm
Frank Ocean.
Frank Ocean. I'm a little lukewarm on some of his newer stuff, but what about Drake? Drake raps and he can sing.
Sure.
Who knows more about a vocal when you have that kind of range?
Oh yeah, he
even
can make,
even Kanye West. You know,
I'd probably and you mentioned Sam Cooke earlier. I always think of Anderson .Paak when I think about Sam Cooke.
Yeah.
He's like to me like the modern day Sam Cooke.
Yeah,
and a guy like him could be great on too. So anyway, I just wanted to ask you that. I figured we'd kind of go off on a tangent there, but who are you? If you have any thoughts on that, like what would your dream like? All throughout history, four-person voice judge panel be. Who are the true voices that you would put on your panel? Send them to us. We'd love to hear from you at overdue_review on Twitter. You can also Facebook us there. And you can email us as well. I'm theclintdavis@gmail.com. And Andy?
Yeah, sedlakjournal@gmail.com. S-E-D-L-A-K, the word journal, all squished together @gmail.com.
So there you go. Hit us up. And dream voice panels. But yeah, Chris Cornell, he's always on mine. I just think he's in rock, man. Just hard to argue with that voice. And speaking of singing shows, I did also see the news lately that ABC, they're going to be resurrecting American Idol again. I just wanted to mention that real quick because I think you and I had both talked about American Idol like a year ago when they canceled. It's only been canceled for a year.
Yeah.
And they've already bring it back. I mean, that's going to be some kind of record.
Yeah, I didn't even have time to miss it.
Seriously. And
did you ever watch American Idol?
I did, yeah. I think I watched, watched like three seasons of it all the way through.
I never did. And you know, I never really watched The Voice either until we got rid of cable. But you know, and I don't know, and it may be a mistake or an oversight on my part, but to me, just this is just Andy talking, that it felt like that was just entertainment. It wasn't necessarily.
Oh, sure.
It wasn't necessarily like, hey, you know, I mean,
let's find a great artist.
Let's
it wasn't that. It wasn't that. And that was what The Voice tried to sell itself on. It was like, we're looking for artists. So they would hire. They would like. I think The Voice allows professionals.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's an age limit on The Voice, but Idol, you could only be like up to like 30 years old. I think is the highest oldest you could be. So
I don't know.
You're cutting out like most of the best singers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was a little snooty when it came to that type of show, and I never embraced it, never wanted anything to do with it.
I watched it because it was well produced and because it was kind of cool to just hear covers of songs that I liked, and they had a great catalog. That was the thing, that as the show got so big, they were able to like do Beatles songs, and they got all these great artists to like let them use their catalog.
Did it feel genuine? Did it feel like, hey, these guys really get it, you know? Or who's this kid trying to play, you know, Paul McCartney?
Sometimes it did, but there were some really special moments and some moments that I'll never forget from watching Idol that were great performances. But no, you're right. Most of the time it was very phony and it was commercial as hell. But it was great turn off your brain TV, which I haven't always been able to get into. But but Idol was one of those shows. So like I said, I think I watched three seasons of it all the way through, and the show was on for like 14 seasons. So I didn't watch a lot. It's not like I was a long time viewer. I think my mom watched it a lot. I think a lot of moms watched it a lot. Was why it did so well. But the only thing we know about the new Idol is that Katy Perry is going to be a judge. So that was a pretty big get for them.
Oh yeah,
you're talking about
she's got new music out. I mean, she's got music like legitimately. Yeah. That's charting right now.
We're talking about, I would put her, I mean, she's probably among the five most popular, she's the most followed person on Instagram.
Yeah.
Like, period. I think she's the most followed person on Twitter also. So she's legitimately, like, one of the most popular people on the planet.
Right.
Huge name. I can't imagine what they paid her to get her to judge on the show. But this isn't Paula Abdul and Randy Jackson. Right. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
Randy Jackson's just a session guy.
I exactly.
Mean, dude was just, you know.
And sometimes those are the best guys to get to judge.
Very, very,
you know what I'm saying?
Very accomplished because they've worked with everybody.
Worked with Bruce.
Worked with Bruce in the 90s, yeah. I think he worked with Bob.
Did he?
I think he did.
Oh, my God. Yeah. He might have been one of those under the red sun
guys or something in New Orleans. I'm not sure. He was with him at one of those points. But anyways, yeah, so they got Katy Perry. That's the only thing I know about it right now. Who knows what will go on. I probably will not. I'll probably watch the premiere episode of The New Idol just to see what's going on. It'll depend on one of the judges they get, if they're going to get me interested. I think that's – singing and talent shows live and die by the judges they get.
Sure.
That's why they're successful or why they're not successful. Right. So it'll depend, and I think Katy Perry's a good start. I mean, I'll watch her. She's very interesting. Obviously, she's very easy to look at. She's a great singer. And she brings some legitimacy to the show. So
she does.
I don't know if she's one of the great singers, but she's a good singer.
I would say she's well above that. I mean, I've always liked Katy Perry.
I have too. Yeah, I like her personality.
I always thought she exactly. She got a good personality, and I think the songs on her, it was that first record, I really like those, and her last record. I've liked her
more recent stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been doing some good stuff lately. So not just the typical cookie cutter crap. But so, yeah, so that's coming back this fall already. It's the body hasn't even gotten cold, but American Idol's coming back. All right, speaking of ABC and canceled TV shows, I also, pivoting along here, let's get off the singing beat. Let's talk about the most controversial cancellation of the 2017 TV season.
Yeah.
Starring the one and only Tim Allen, Last Man Standing on ABC, was canceled a couple weeks ago. And my God, you would have thought this show was on the air for 20 seasons, had, you know, 15 million viewers every week.
Yeah.
This show was a Friday night show that got 1.5 million viewers every week, which is good for Friday night, but it's not the best.
The very fact that it aired on a Friday night
tells
is
you.
Not a good sign. I mean, that's the, you know, those are dangerous waters.
They
on
are.
Friday
that's it's the graveyard.
And hence, that's why we're here, you know,
on a Friday night. Exactly. Coming at you live. So Last Man Standing gets canceled, and everyone said now, and Tim Allen is well known for being a conservative in his politics. And the show, I never watched Last Man Standing. I don't know if you ever saw an episode.
Never did. And I had no idea that it was I just hadn't heard. I guess I knew that it was on, and I was aware that Tim Allen had a new show.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about it, really, other than those two things, until it was canceled.
And I think that's what's happening with a lot of people. And it's unfortunate, but the whole thing's been politicized. People are saying it was canceled because of the politics and because the character on the show was also a conservative. And so this is an attack on Christians. This is an attack on the right. This is
right.
You can't be a right in Hollywood. But people got to calm down a little bit and understand about the television business. I think people are just jumping in and hearing this.
Okay, that's a great point. Break it down a little further. How does a TV show get canceled?
So the biggest thing that cancels a TV show, obviously, is bad ratings.
Right.
That's the number one thing that cancels a show.
Because if people aren't watching, then you can't sell ads.
Can't sell ads. That's all that matters. Unless you're on HBO
exactly.
or you're on. But even then, you got to get subscribers.
Correct.
So at that point, you're talking about buzz. But with the show, the number one thing, obviously, is ratings. And like I said, this show got, I think it was getting a 1.5, maybe a 1.7 million viewers a week, which is fine, and it's actually pretty decent for Friday night. It was the highest rated, I think, Friday night TV show. But again, no one watches TV on Friday night. So being the highest rated Friday night TV show is like being like the best shitty team, you know, in the NFL or something
that. Like you're the thinnest kid at Fat Kid.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Very eloquent. You're the best team of the teams that miss the playoffs. That's pretty much what we're saying. You just missed. So that on Friday nights, it got okay ratings. But that's not the only thing that leads to cancellation of TV shows. It's not all about ratings. Sometimes it's also about critical acclaim, which ABC pointed to in their cancellation of Last Man Standing. The show was a critical punching bag. It never got any acclaim. I don't think it won any awards during its entire run. And that is a point that people – and also, like you said, Andy, you barely knew it existed. So didn't get a lot of buzz either, this show. I think it had a loyal audience, but that was about it. And those shows always kind of go down, and it sucks when you're a fan of the show, but – it's what happens in TV.
And I think when you're in that middle ground, if you're not growing your audience, then we don't want you anymore. I mean, that's just –
when you're on a network especially. Like this was on ABC. Because, this wasn't on like AMC or
and
something like that.
And
this
it's not
on
like
– one of the networks.
Right. And unless you're holding a real significant number – again, You're on a Friday night, take it with a grain of salt. But unless you're holding a really significant number, these networks are always trying to grow those shows. And if they look at it and they say, this thing ain't growing. I mean, the numbers aren't going to lie to you. If it's not growing, if they don't feel like they can make it come back to life, there's only one alternative.
Yeah, and then you're taking off the air. And the other thing that feeds into a show being canceled are production costs. Huge thing. If the network's not making enough money to cover it, then that's a big deal. And one of the things about Last Man Standing is Tim Allen's contract was up after six seasons. So he was going to have to renegotiate a new contract for the seventh season. And Tim Allen is not a cheap guy to hire to work on your TV show. I mean, think about it. Tim Allen on Home Improvement, he was making $1.25 million an episode.
That's almost
on Home Improvement.
That's almost Friends money.
It's almost Friends money. So you're talking about $1.25 million an episode. The show's on 24 episodes a year. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's making north of about $30 million a year to be a dad on a show that lasts for 23 minutes once a week. So, I mean, that's incredible. So he wasn't making that kind of money for this show, but he was making $240,000 an episode. That was the last number I could find, and that was a couple years old. So that's $4.2 million a year. So that's not cheap.
Right.
That's expensive.
Right.
That put him actually in the top 20 highest paid guys, actors, female, male, whatever, on television.
On all of
television. He was in the top 20. So, again, you're talking about – and the other people on that list were stars of, like, The Big Bang Theory, number one rated show in TV, stars of Modern Family, which is in the top 10 rated TV shows,
Critical Darling.
Exactly.
That is.
Stars of shows like, you know, NCIS and that kind of stuff. These are the people that are on that list with Tim Allen, and he's on a Friday night graveyard show. So his contract's going to be renegotiated. Clearly, you're going to try to get more money every time your contract's renegotiated. You're not going to be looking for less. So, and this guy, I mean, he's Toy Story. I mean, Tim Allen is a powerful. You might think of him as like this. Yeah, he was the guy from Home Improvement, but he is a powerful.
He's a brand.
He is definitely a brand. Yeah,
he is a brand.
There's like a lifestyle associated with him that people identify with, and he's great. Home Improvement was one of my favorite sitcoms of all time.
I love that
show. It was so funny. Yeah. I think he was brilliant in it. I think it was the perfect vehicle for his character of this masculine, you know, kind of doofus that really like always messed stuff up, but his heart was in the right place. It was a really good show.
Sure.
And so I could see why Last Man Standing, you know, people did go to watch it because Tim Allen's, he's funny, you know, and he's dependable. If he's in something, it's probably going to do pretty well. He's not been involved in a lot of failures. But just the amount of money he was making, the ratings that the show got, no critical acclaim of any kind, really no buzz. And let's not forget, this show was on for six seasons. Do you have any idea what that means?
I had no idea.
In television these days, six seasons is like a show would kill to be on the air for six seasons.
What is the number of episodes they have to shoot before they can put it into syndication? Because that's what everybody's shooting for.
Exactly. I don't think it's an – I can't remember if it's a number. But I think it's just five seasons.
Oh, is it five seasons?
I think it's you have to have five seasons of show
so
under
this
your
show,
belt.
So this show will likely be in syndication.
It already is. It got picked up by CMT. So CMT bought the rights to it. Yeah, so are you shocked by that? CMT bought the rights to it, so that is what I was going to say. So the show's going to live on in syndication. So the studio that – I think it was 20th Century Fox produced it.
Yeah.
They'll continue to get money from this. And these days, even when a show gets canceled, it's not dead. We've seen it 100 times, shows get picked up by other networks. And actually, Last Man Standing's on Netflix right now.
Nashville was on
Netflix. Nashville just moved networks. Yeah. I think it moved to CMT, actually. Just moved networks from ABC to CMT. So you could see this happen. I could see this show. Now, Tim Allen's going to have to take a big pay cut if he's going to move to cable or Netflix or something like that. But I could see another network picking this show up with as much buzz as it's gotten.
You may not have to take a pay cut if he moves to Netflix.
Maybe not, but they're pretty cheap, I think.
Netflix?
Most people say, yeah.
Really?
Adam Sandler, I think, is one of the only guys that makes a lot of money there. But people go there because
the money
they produce good stuff.
The money they're paying out to Chappelle and the money they're paying out
I do wonder what Chappelle made. But I think for people who create TV shows, from what I've heard, it's a pretty cheap place really to go. But yeah, I mean, if it's got him, then you know you got his name on it. So I don't know what's going to happen with Last Man Standing, but I don't get all the controversy. I think the fact that he's a conservative and the show was about this guy who's a conservative, that has nothing to do with it.
If Last Man Standing
was about a conservative dad and it was the number one rated show on TV, ABC would not be canceling it.
Have you seen the show? I mean, have you?
I never watched it, no. I've never seen it.
I mean,
but from what I've read, it's supposed to be kind of like All in the Family, which that's I think that's kind of an insult to All in the Family because it was such a landmark.
Boy, yeah.
But it's like All in the Family meets like a Home Improvement kind of thing.
And how come whenever people describe a show or an artist or a song or a movie, they always compare it to one of the best freaking...
Because, you know, everyone knows it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but that is so... Anyway, I just, you know...
But he's like the conservative dad, and he's got... I think his son-in-law is a liberal, so it's kind of the same thing as All in the Family.
Were there political... overtones to the...
I think so, yeah. I think from what I read, the show like changed its tone big time when it went to the second season. They made it a lot more political. And from what I read, it was kind of awkwardly handled. Like, it wasn't really a meaningful... Like, they could have done some meaningful political storylines, but instead it was just kind of like the day's talking points was what I read. So yeah. It wasn't really anything deep. It's pretty surfacey political
stuff. Do they try to make like lessons? Like, here's here's your lesson for the...
That's what I read.
Like an episode, Full House style kind of a...
I don't know about that, if it's that heavy-handed.
But you know what I mean. Like, they're pointing the audience in a direction. Is that...
I don't think it was, like, an agenda show where it was, like, we're trying to make the audience into conservatives. I think more or less you just had disagreements between the characters politically.
Okay.
And then they buried the hatchet at the end of the episode. And it was like, well, that's all right. That's your opinion, and I'll have mine. From what I read, anyways.
Right.
I've never seen the show. So to say that... You know, the show was canceled for being political. I just think that's not an... you don't have an understanding of how the television business works.
It is a common card that is played, you know. And I think there is sort of a rush to judgment or, you know, just all... Here's one more example of, you know. And I think that's, you know, it may be a little bit... It may be a rush judgment, you know.
Yeah.
I think... I guess what you're getting at.
I totally agree. But, I mean, look at a show like King of the Hill.
Yeah.
Every character on the show, no question conservatives, all of them, and obviously it was kind of a joke, but they were all these deep South Texas guys.
But it was embraced by...
Gun-owning guys.
Yeah.
And that show was on the air for like 11 years. I mean, it was a long-running and very popular show that still lives on in streaming now. So.
Sure.
You know, it's not like there haven't been these shows, and shows are not. Shows get canceled for one reason only. It's because people don't watch them and they don't make enough money. That's the only reason shows get canceled.
And networks do not cut off the nose to spite the face.
No.
You know, I mean, if it's making you...
They want to make money.
If it's making you money, you're going to have a seat at the table. They're not going to be symbolic.
No.
You know, networks and corporations and companies, like, you know, of that, in that fashion... They're not symbolic people. They don't do things for the sheer symbolism of it.
No, I don't think so. It's all about the dollar, baby. The all-idy dollar.
Cold hard.
As Homer Simpson once said.
Cold hard cash. It's all that matters.
Oh, man.
The faculty committee needs to approve it after they check for microaggressions.
Microaggressions? You mean like midget warriors?
No, they're objectionable words or phrases. For instance, midget warriors.
I know what microaggressions are. It's the latest liberal attack at free speech. And a lot of fun if you do them right.
The university has a list of stuff they don't allow speakers to say, you know, to protect the students.
From what, ideas?
It's just the way that my school does things, Dad. Please, my grade is riding on this.
Fine.
All right, let's move on a little bit, man.
Now,
we're already...
I'm looking at our Facebook Live. We are up to two viewers.
We're back to our maximum number.
We're back. We're holding our audience.
Now, don't quote me on this, but I think I've read that on Facebook, that's the maximum you can have.
I think that's true.
So I think we've peaked out.
I think that's true.
I think it's just a glitch in the app itself.
I just don't think it goes two viewers.
It just doesn't go any higher than two.
No.
We may have more than two, but it just doesn't click.
It just doesn't tell
far.
You exactly.
Right.
We could have a million, but it just says two. I think it's trying to keep you humble or something.
Right.
All right, so let's move on a little bit. I want to talk just a little bit more about television before I toss things over to you, Andy. This is the best time in TV for me. Like, all of my favorite shows are back on and new, and I was being asked the other day about, like, what are you watching right now that's kind of, like, old on Netflix?
Right.
I'm not watching anything old right now. It's like everything I'm watching is on right now, and I'm watching the new episodes. So
it's in its first run.
Sure, like I said, my favorite show is Fargo, which is probably my favorite show on TV. Period.
It's funny you mentioned. We're watching the second season right now.
Oh man, it's so good.
God,
did you like the first season?
God,
one of the best seasons of TV I've ever seen.
It's very good.
And I thought the second season was just as good.
Where I'm only two episodes in.
Oh, dude,
I'm only two. Hold on now,
fantastic.
Yeah, just. Yeah.
But the third season's great too.
And I don't want to cut you off. I don't want to divert because we're classic for doing that when we get together. So I don't want to. I want to make a conscious decision not to do it. However,
too late.
Somebody was. I can't remember who I was talking to, but they had listened to the podcast and they had said, you know, how much TV does Clint watch?
Well,
give me because you do. I will say.
Question.
Hold on now. I will say that. You have a handle on a lot of shows.
I try
in
to.
In many different kinds of shows. See, that's me. Like, I've got a style when it comes to TV, more so that when it comes to TV. I kind of like certain shows, like series in a certain style. Bro,
sure.
You are all over the board. So take me. Okay, so you get off work. How do you have, you know, a handle on that number?
So
that,
my big day is Monday, because I'm off on Mondays.
Okay.
And Beth's at work. So that's the day, like, usually I'll watch the shows that she doesn't watch with me. And we watch Fargo together, so usually we watch that on, right. Like, I think it airs on Tuesdays. We usually watch it on Wednesday night or something.
Right.
We watch it on demand.
Yeah.
We watch Veep together, so we'll watch that after that airs.
Yeah.
I think on Monday nights we watch it. But usually by myself, I'll watch Silicon Valley. I watch Better Call Saul on Mondays. I'm going to be watching Master of None now here again since that's new again.
Yep. Yeah,
but
it's on our
list. It's really just whenever I have time. There's not like a set night. I'd say Monday is probably when I watch the most TV, but I just
How many hours of TV do you watch on a Monday? Come on.
Right now it's probably not as much as you would think. It's probably like 4 hours.
Okay.
Which I don't think is an outrageous amount.
It's not an outrageous amount, no.
You know, but that's because the shows I'm watching are on right now. So it's like one episode at a time.
Right,
I'm not binging anything
right
this moment.
So, I mean.
But like 2 weeks ago, I watched the show. I watched Legion, and I reviewed it on the show.
Yeah.
I watched the whole series, like the whole first season, like in 2 days. And so that was like a true binging session.
Okay.
I wanted to tear through it really quickly.
Okay.
So I do that sometimes,
okay.
But most of the time I try to watch shows one episode at a time. Actually, I am watching a couple older shows too. So like when I get home after,
I figured.
When I get home from work,
because do you have show? Let me ask you this: do you? Because I do this with music. There's music that I feel like I should hear, and I'll listen to that.
Yeah.
And then there's music that I just, you know, it's what I'm into. So I'm going to go back. Like there's like casual listening, and then there's listening to just sort of because. You know, I want to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to talk about it on the show. I want to be able to have a conversation, you know, when we're whatever at a party.
Yep, yep.
Because we go to parties all the time.
Oh yeah, we're big party people.
Yeah.
I do that. I don't feel like I watch a lot of stuff that I feel like I need to watch.
Okay.
I genuinely want to watch.
Yeah.
Like everything.
Yeah.
I just want to watch everything. It's just how I am.
Yeah.
So I want to see everything.
I go on like fact finding missions. Like I want to know about whoever.
I do that.
I want to know about fill in the blank.
A show I'm going to touch on in a minute is one that I feel like is a half watch.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, and I've talked about this on the show before too. Shows that you've gotten really into,
and
they're not good anymore, but you just keep watching them because you've watched them this much. Like The Last Man on Earth. That's my show. I just wish it would be canceled.
Sure.
So I can be kind of done watching it, but I don't want to stop watching it because I like it enough to keep going, but it's just not that good.
Right.
But so the old shows, but when I get home from lunch or from work, I'll have like a little lunch because I get home early. I'll watch NYPD Blue. I've been going back and watching that show again.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my show I watch like when I'm eating, and Beth doesn't watch that with me. And then when we go to my mom's house once a week, we watch The Americans. So I've been watching that show too, going back through that. And then like Beth and I watch a couple of other older ones too. We watch The Fall on Netflix, which I'm going to talk about here in a minute. But yeah. Yeah, I do. I watch a lot of TV.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But I really like it. You know?
Again, I said we wouldn't divert, but we did. Your original point,
so
your original thought.
The other ones, though, the shows I'm really excited about now, it's just, you've got Fargo on, you've got Veep, which I think is one of the funniest shows of
brilliant.
All time. I mean, it's unbelievable. Just kills you. So brutal.
It's
Leftovers.
It really is like The Simpsons in that the jokes are so, like, every line.
Rapid.
Every,
so rapid.
Every line of dialogue is a joke.
Yeah,
almost.
That's for sure. You'll get lost. But The Leftovers, which to me is the closest thing to Lost that's ever been on TV since Lost, and I probably like it actually better than Lost. Better Call Saul, which just gets better every week. I love that show. It's so well written, so well acted. It's like a masterclass every time. It's just, and it's funny, and it's just a cool show. I like Silicon Valley a lot too. But like I said, a couple other shows I like a lot are coming back out now. Master of None just had new episodes drop. Bloodline, We'll have new episodes drop before for its final season before we release this episode. So it's a good month for TV, man. May, I don't think, used to be like the month for TV.
No.
But I think Mad Men kind of changed that in a lot of ways because that show would debut in April and would run through May and June. And like really good shows were not on at that point.
Yeah.
Until I feel like, you know, Mad Men. I could be wrong on that, but I think that was really one of the first ones to do that. So it's a great time for TV. I did wonder kind of like what you were watching. Are there any like shows that are on right now, first run, that you're watching?
We first run shows? No. We're watching, like you say, the second season of Fargo. We're about to, we had a couple false starts on the second season of Master of None. But we got to, you know, we're going to sit down and we're going to watch that because we really enjoyed the first season. What have I been into, though? It's funny. I have been in this again, man. We're going to be way out. We're going to get way out in the weeds. But I have been going back through. I think maybe we talked about it. And I've gotten really into like film noir. And so I'm.
Yeah, you told me that.
I'm picking up, you know, these you know, detective shows from the 40s and 50s, primarily.
Are you talking about like Dragnet kind of stuff?
No, not shows, but movies.
Oh, movies.
Yeah,
okay.
Movies. Yeah, I mean, so you know, if Bogart's in it, I'm watching it. I've really gotten into Dana Andrews and Orson Welles. James Cotton. You know, some of the old gangster, you know, movies from
sure,
the
Edward 30s. G. Robinson.
Edward G. Robinson. I love Key Largo. It's one of my
I've never seen that. I always wanted to see that.
Yeah, Scott, it's one of my favorites.
That's Bogart, right?
Bogart and
Bacall?
And Bacall and Robinson.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
I mean,
stuff.
That's it's phenomenal.
It's like a murder mystery thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's sort of. It's, you know, kind of. You know, it's more
set
of
in a hotel or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more of a mob movie, you know, than anything. You know, The Big Sleep, I've gotten into Robert Mitchum a lot. So that type of thing is what I've been doing at night. So more than I'll listen, you know, I'll put on a record and then, you know, I'll listen to maybe a record or two. And a lot of people know, but my wife works third shift, so I've got evenings, you know, just me and the dog, you know. And so I'll listen to music, and then right around, I don't know, maybe 11 or so, that's when I move over to the couch and start watching, you know, my film noir, because you can't watch that while it's still light outside. You know, those are nighttime movies, you know. But that's
totally
anyway,
agree.
That's what I've been doing. I haven't been watching many TV shows.
My movie watching has slipped a little bit. I've been definitely watching more TV. Like I said, I think it's the time of year.
Cagney, too. I forgot about
winter time is the time where I really – I'm movies nonstop, and I don't watch much TV in the winter, pretty much. But – yeah, it's. I wanted to catch up on kind of what you're doing, but yeah, I do watch a lot of stuff.
I'm still watching The Twilight Zone. I've been watching The Twilight Zone since 2004.
Same here. I mean, those episodes are rewatchable. I can rewatch the same ones over and over again.
I
love that. You and I, it's one of the things that we bonded on early on. We both love The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
It is just flawless.
The writing,
best writing
impeccable.
Ever.
Impeccable.
It's incredible. I mean, Rod Serling. And the other guys that worked on there, like, didn't who's the guy who wrote Fahrenheit 451? Ray Bradbury, didn't he write some?
Yeah,
he wrote a couple episodes.
Yeah.
Like, he was friends with Rod Serling. I mean, it's great. Like, sci-fi gods are, like, the people who wrote these episodes.
And the actors that pop up in The Twilight Zone. I mean, Redford.
Every great actor from that time is in an episode.
Burgess
Meredith.
Yeah.
In one of my favorite episodes is the guy who wants to read the books and loses and breaks his glasses.
He was in two or three episodes. and you know, you've got guys like Dennis Hopper who you know, would show up. And so it was totally rewatchable, and I'll just watch it forever. I go back to it.
Same here. I'm so glad Netflix has that. I hope they never. I never drop that because that is a wealth of TV knowledge if you've never gone back and watched it. So speaking of Netflix, last thing here before I pass things over to you, I've been watching a show on Netflix. I'm not all the way done with the season yet, but the way the show is, I think I can still give you an accurate kind of review of it because it's not a scripted drama. I've been watching Bill Nye Saves the World. Have you watched this at all?
You know, I haven't. I know he is, you know, in the midst of a career resurgence.
Yeah, big time.
At the moment. And I have not watched it.
So this first season of Bill Nye Saves the World, I think, is 13 episodes, half-hour shows. They're very quick. They're short. They're less than a half hour, actually. All of them are on Netflix, and also they brought back some of the old episodes of Bill Nye the Science Guy on Netflix as well. They've got like a collection of some of the best stuff. So if you,
did you go back to Science Guy,
I haven't yet. I'm wondering if it holds up.
That's what I'm saying. I wonder if it's aged gracefully.
I'm wondering because it's such a dangerous game when you go back and revisit the childhood favorites, man.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
that's dangerous.
A few years ago, I went back and I rewatched the Turtles movie, and I was just, I walked around with my head down for a few days after that. It was just such a freaking disappointment. In the second one,
you got
too,
the Tarzan Boy song playing.
Yeah. And
Baltimore. Good stuff. God. So I don't know. I can't speak to Bill Nye the Science Guy yet, but episodes are there. But I just want to say one thing about Bill Nye Saves the World.
Yeah.
If you watch the first episode and you're not crazy about it, because I wasn't either, I thought the first episode was very weak. I was like, this sucks. Like, I really thought it was not a very good episode of television. And I think this is a problem you get with a lot of Netflix shows. I think Netflix greenlights stuff, and then they put it into production, and then they just go. Like, they don't do a pilot, like a pilot session like every other network. Even Amazon does this.
So not that it's rushed, more like it's undercooked?
More like, they didn't take enough notes.
Okay.
Like, they just were like, just go ahead. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And I think it's worked for some of their shows, but, like, on this one, I feel like they could have used a lot more like refinement, and they could have made it really something special, but it feels kind of rushed together, I feel like. So my biggest complaint about Bill Nye Saves the World, though, by far, and the show, let me break it down for you real quick. Bill Nye is this actual scientist. He made his living as a structural engineer for years, working, for some major corporations. And he started hosting this show in the 90s called Bill Nye the Science Guy that Disney produced. And the show was beloved. Kids loved it. Adults actually liked it a lot. And it was a cool show. It was like he would do experiments that kids could do, and he would really teach you something in
a
half
funny.
Hour.
You know, I mean,
and it was funny.
Yeah, it was humorous.
And it was a well-produced show. It was very 90s. It looked cool. But so this show is for adults. This show is not for kids, and Nye has said that. It's for his audience that grew up with him. Now they've grown up, and he wants to do a more grown-up show for them. So it's for adults. Doesn't always feel like it is. Feels like he's still treating us like kids sometimes. But in every episode, he tackles a different topic. So when I first came in,
does Bill Nye talk down to his audience?
Oh, he does. Yeah, he does. That's one of my problems with the show. When I first watched it, I thought the whole show was about climate change. Like, that was all I had heard. I thought this was just a 13 episode. He's going to talk about climate change. So I was like, man, this is going to get like pretty old after, about the fifth hour of watching him talk about climate change. We get it. But it's not. Every episode deals with a different topic, and some are more interesting than others. But like I said, first episode, just not very good. But the problem with all the episodes I've seen is the studio audience. The show was shot before a studio audience, and I just feel like there is nothing that makes a show sound more dated, sound more stilted, awkward than a studio. I hate a studio audience.
When the applause lights start flashing.
It is so phony. And the way that they'll do the when he brings out different experiments, it's
but that was an
cheesy.
Element that was an element of Bill Nye the Science Guy, right? Because I remember
I don't think that show was in front of a live audience though. I don't think it was.
Not in front of a live audience, but I do remember like sound effects
recorded,
and
know,
like
for comedic effect.
Yeah.
But this isn't recorded. This is like a real, so it feels way more forced, I feel
like. Yeah.
But they gotta get rid of the studio audience. It's so bad because it makes Nye act weird also. Like he acts to get reactions from the audience versus just acting for the people at home watching, which is who he should be acting. There's only 30 people in the room. There's a million people watching at home. You got to treat the people at home more importantly than you do.
So is it like a lecture style, or is it
it's not quite
or
like
is it like
that.
Sitcom? But I mean, he doesn't address them. In other words, like
sometimes he does.
Okay.
Address them. It's a little bit of a hybrid of that, but he tells jokes sometimes, and they're really bad. And then, like, they would be better jokes if he told them and then they had, like, a fake laugh and it was kind of, like, cheeky.
Yeah.
Like, we know this is
like
cheesy.
Everybody's in on the joke
that
would
be
fun. Not funny.
Some people are gay. Some are bi. Some are asexual, and some will take whatever they can get. You know what I mean?
It sounds like a lot of effort. It sounds like
It
sounds like he's a little torn between the topic and the audience.
I don't think he's a particularly, like, great host. I think he was good on the show because it was heavily scripted on the Science Guy.
And there were a lot of very fast edits,
a lot of cuts.
Too.
That's the other thing. A lot of cuts on the old show. Yeah. This one, though, there's not. It's like a lot of long takes, and we have to just follow him as he lays out these experiments, which most of the time aren't really that great. And then he brings out a correspondent, has them do a piece, which the correspondent pieces are probably the best part of the entire show because they are informative. They're well. They look good. I don't think they go deep enough. They're very surfacey. Like, they're not hard-hitting enough for me. But the experiments he does are kind of silly. And then the worst part of the show to me is this panel. He does a panel every episode. So he brings in – it's like, if you ever seen Real Time with Bill Maher?
Yeah.
So he brings in, like, Bill Maher. He brings in three other people. And one of them is supposed to disagree with whatever he's talking about. And then the other two kind of agree. But it's like the panel, like, no one really disagrees that much. It's almost like he just brought in three people that agree with him. And there's really no back and forth. He'll just ask them, like, a question that just he knows the answer to.
Just a lot of, oh, you're so right. Oh, God. Yeah,
there is
so,
a lot. There is some
so
of that.
Right.
And
yeah.
I just don't feel like I learn a lot. And the panel part is cut up a lot.
Yeah.
So it makes it sound kind of weird. So I don't know. Just I haven't been nuts about it, but there have been a couple episodes I like the second episode a lot. He was talking about like holistic medicines and how they don't work.
Yeah.
And he did a really good experiment that showed that he bought like this $60 all-natural heartburn medication that they sell at Whole Foods. And then he bought like classic milk of magnesia for like $2 from the drugstore, generic. And he, you know, did the test as to like what the acid looks like, and he poured them both into the thing. And, of course, the milk of magnesia worked like perfectly.
Yeah.
And the other thing did not work at all. It actually made it worse. So it was a really good – like that was – it was cool because – he's talking about stuff that I think you really use.
And you remember it. Like, it's easy to remember.
Yeah, exactly. And the climate change stuff is – there's no question it's the most important scientific thing. But the problem with that is the people watching the show – if you're watching the Bill Nye Show, you already know climate change is a real thing.
Right.
You already believe that.
Right.
Because it's been proven by scientists. And you trust scientists because you're watching – clearly you're watching a show
about
a scientist.
You're watching a scientist, yes.
So he's preaching to the choir is all he's doing, and I think he knows that to a point because he did say, like, you need to spread the word and get involved with different movements and stuff like that. So hopefully there'll be some of that. But that episode felt a little preachy to me, and it didn't need to be because everyone already agrees with him who's watching the show.
The vast majority.
Yeah, exactly. He had one guy on the panel
there's no need to preach when the majority is in your corner.
Exactly. But
also, I guess you could look at it this way, is that what you're doing these days when you do that type of thing is that you're attempting to speak truth to power, because the power, quote-unquote, would not be on your side in this case.
That's true, and that is sad. But So Bill Nye Bill Nye Saves the World, and actually it has a theme song by Tyler the Creator, which I did not know that Bill Nye and Tyler the Creator are apparently pals. I guess Tyler the Creator lives like right down the street from where his lab is in California, and I guess he just dropped by and he would like hang out. And so Nye was like, "Hey, I'm doing this new show. Would you want to do the theme song for me?" And he did the theme song. It's a pretty cool little nice little theme song. So yeah, those are a couple of interesting cats hanging out with each other.
Well, I mean, yeah.
20-something rapper and, 60-year-old scientist guy. I don't know.
I mean, Tyler, you're the creator. Have you listened to
– Oh, yeah. I'm a fan.
Oh, my God. That dude
out
is
there.
Avant-garde.
No question.
He is way out there.
I wonder if Nye's ever listened to his music. Like, I wonder really...
He just thinks he's a nice neighborhood boy.
He probably thinks he's like a musician, but he's like, oh, yeah, he probably does some of that, like, Justin Bieber kind of pop stuff.
Yeah.
He's never listened to Yonkers or any of that. I'd love to see his face the first time he heard what Tyler, the Creator, had to say about Bruno Mars. That would be pretty good to see. All right, so that's Bill Nye Saves the World. 13 episodes right now are on Netflix. And as I said, Bill Nye the Science Guy collection is also on Netflix right now as well.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, I think I've talked about enough TV here for the first hour and a half of what's usually an hour-long show. Let's go, Andy. Stretch your legs out, man. Let's hear what you've got. You've got going on. This time.
Oh, golly! All right, let's try. Let's start with this, and I appreciate it. By the way, this is fun, and I hope I can only hope that everybody's hanging with us as we.
I can only stand to see you about once a year, so
as we indulge.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we'll start by doing this. We don't get together often enough, as you know. And folks that maybe if they aren't as familiar with the program or if they're not as familiar with you and I as people for purposes of the Stream Police podcast, we kind of stay in our lanes, right? We have our specialties. I talk music. You talk movies and TV. And then we really don't moonlight into each other's territory. But I'm almost as big a movie fan as I am, you know, into music, and vice versa is true for you.
You know I'm a huge music guy.
Yeah, I mean, God, we've spent hours upon hours at the pub.
Oh, sure.
Breaking all this down. So let's start by this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and I don't want you to think about the answer. They're all music related, okay? I don't want you to think about the answer. I just want to hear what comes to you off the top of your head, okay? Because people don't.
Good at that.
I'm just saying. Look,
I'm not good
people,
at that.
If people listen to the show, they don't get to see this side of Clint, and this is what I want to kind of dig into. Okay? So right. I'm going to go 3-2. With your favorite album, go.
Oh God, I'm going to go with Neil Young's Freedom.
The most disappointing album you've ever listened to.
Oh my God. See, that's tough.
Now, come on. We've all been disappointed.
I'm thinking of something Dylan because I always hold them up so high.
Yeah.
You know what? No, I'm going to give you my real answer for this. It was probably Graduation by Kanye West.
Really?
Disappointed me the most because I was a diehard.
Is that true?
Yes.
Because it disappointed the hell out of me, as you know that.
I was a diehard. Yeah. I was a diehard College Dropout guy.
Yeah.
Diehard Late Registration guy. I liked that one even more. And then I built up. I mean, he was one of the guys that really was like one of the foundations of my musical fandom.
Same.
And Graduation, it just didn't have. It sounded too much like the other ones, but just not as good.
Yeah.
It was like everything was kind of trying to sound like it, but just not quite there, with the exception of like Stronger is a great song.
I thought it was a very homogenous record in that it all just sort of, you know, I didn't feel like it was the most unique thing that he could have done.
Agreed. That's my pick then.
Best live show.
It was probably Springsteen, the first time that I ever saw him when I was with you.
I was present,
In Cincinnati here. That's probably the best show that I've seen. It blew me away.
The most lukewarm show you've ever seen.
I was just talking to you about this one on the car on the way over here. I saw Jamie Johnson in Cincinnati not that long ago, and he's a guy that I like, love, idolize, worship, think he's a genius, and went to see him live. He doesn't tour very often. I was really excited, but it was just like an okay show.
Yeah.
It wasn't the best thing I've ever seen. It wasn't the worst, but you know, I expected more.
This is good. People don't get this side of you. Name an underrated band.
I don't think people talk about Steely Dan enough as being one of the great bands ever. I feel like old people talk about it, but I don't feel like people like our age like Steely Dan that much. To me, they're very underrated.
And that's a very millennial. It seems like that's a band that would appeal to millennials
so.
As well.
So
I don't know
witty,
why. Yeah, it's exactly.
It's academic.
Yeah,
the musicianship's fantastic. Yeah. I think people need to give Steely Dan more of a chance.
Name an overrated band.
The first band I think of when I thought of overrated was the Beatles, but they're not over. I mean, they're only overrated.
No, it's fine. That's a fine answer. Go explain that though.
They're overrated because they're constantly talked about and played nonstop
right.
as like the only band that matters.
Right.
And that's just, no one can live up to that. Right. I don't care who you are.
Right.
So no band could live up to it. Even though the Beatles catalog is fantastic, I only listen to about half of it.
Yeah.
I'm one of the guys that only listens to the later stuff, the new stuff, the new Beatles.
Right, the new
Beatles. You know, the post, like, the right. post Rubber Soul stuff right. is the stuff I like. And the stuff before that, I just don't care for that much.
Right.
And that's half their catalog.
Oh, yeah.
So I probably would say the Beatles.
Excluding Bob Dylan and Springsteen, who's your favorite writer?
Hank Williams is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, just for the sheer number of songs that he wrote. Again, I would probably put Kanye West up there. Yeah. I think he's a genius.
Yeah.
There'd be a lot of rappers on that list. I'd probably have Outkast on there, too, I think.
Speaking of Kanye West, name somebody who's always irritated you. He hasn't always irritated me, but, he's...
I think Ed Sheeran has always irritated me.
Okay.
Ever since, like, the first time I ever saw him. I don't know. It's just something about, like, the way he looks and I don't get it, I guess, with Ed Sheeran. Something about him irritates me.
If John Lennon's ghost appeared before you and he had time to answer one question, what would you ask him?
Oh, wow. I would ask him, what songwriters now does he think, you know, kind of carry the mantle? I would like to know that.
Skinny Elvis or Fat Elvis?
Got to go with Fat Elvis all day. The karate chopping Elvis. No question.
Other than Kendrick Lamar and The Weeknd, who is the most talented young artist right now?
I like Anderson .Paak a lot.
Yeah.
I think he's got a ton of talent. He is a great writer. And
versatile.
A fantastic voice. So I would probably have him up. I think Drake's really talented as well. I think he's underrated a lot of times.
Would you rather lock Justin Bieber in a room full of Beatles records and tell him to take notes or just punch him in the face?
I don't think I would do either of those things, honestly. I'd probably just let him keep doing what he's doing.
Okay. All right.
I think he's been getting better, I feel like. I feel like his music's been getting a little bit better.
I think it's so boring.
A little
man.
Bit. I'm not saying it's
the
great stuff.
I think it's so goddamn boring.
Well, that's...
I mean, that is soft rock bullshit. I mean, that is soulless, corporate soft rock.
He had the one tune last year that was a hit that I really did like, though. It was the only song by him that I've liked so far. I can't remember the name of the song. That's how great the song was.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember the name of it.
It made it clearly made an impression.
I really liked it, though. They played it all the time, and I was like, this is a pretty good song.
All right, finally, why do you think people laugh when I tell them that you and I saw Garth Brooks in Lexington, Kentucky a couple years ago?
Because they have their heads up their asses. That's the only reason.
No, see, why do they laugh when I tell them that I saw Garth Brooks?
They can't acknowledge that because they look at Garth and they see like the checkered shirts and the headset mic running around. They think he's a joke.
They think 90s. That's why.
They think he's a joke.
Dated.
I don't think they think he's serious.
Pudgy 90s phenom.
But he is serious. The guy loves performing more than anyone. He is a legitimate guy who cares about songwriting.
Right.
He worships songwriters if you listen to him. He has done a lot to support good songwriters as well. And he's not really a big songwriter himself, but he has dabbled a few times as well.
He's a totally
underrated guy, though. People just don't take him seriously.
He's also one of those guys that he is not edgy. He does have a family-friendly show. And
sure.
I do feel like guys that sort of... not that they necessarily play up that appeal, but they're not. They own that appeal. They own their family friendly appeal. I think those dudes tend to be looked down on by your music snobs. A lot of them.
But there have been times where Garth was edgy. I mean, think about the song "We Shall Be Free."
But nobody remembers.
Can you imagine?
But nobody remembers that song.
Doesn't matter. He still cut it. And it was still.
He did.
Can you imagine Jason Aldean cutting a song like that on a deep cut?
Yeah.
Can you imagine Jason Aldean doing a song like "Wolves" or "Face to Face," where he's putting he's singing from the perspective of a rape victim? I mean, how, you know what I'm saying?
Like, even the thunder rolls.
The thunder rolls. I couldn't, hard-nosed song, man.
Yeah, I couldn't see him doing that.
That's what I'm saying. So,
but they do think family friendly. They almost think Disney.
They think he's silly, but
he's
not silly. He's a great business guy. He's managed his image very well over the years, and I don't know. People just don't give him the respect. But you'll have more fun at a Garth Brooks show than you would have at almost any other show. I mean, you enjoyed it, right?
Oh, I did enjoy it.
You like his music anyway. Yeah. But,
it was high energy. I mean, he's not like Oasis, who just stands there like they're freaking cardboard.
Like they're pissed off to be there.
And they probably were.
He legitimately, I think, enjoys being there. And we saw him. It was his second show of the night, right?
That's right. I, I always forget about that.
Like, that
he
was played the second two-hour
right.
show of the night.
That's right. I always forget about that.
Yeah. Most guys are lucky if they can do an hour and a half.
That was a funny evening because the show didn't – I don't think, dude, the show started until almost 10 o'clock.
I think it was like 10:30. I'm telling you. I think it was 10:30 when he actually started. It was, and we didn't get out of there till 1.
I know. I had like a three-hour drive back to Dayton.
And he had been performing since like 7 o'clock. Yeah, I mean, the guy's a machine. He's insane.
That is whacked
People
out.
Need to, they need to re, they need to look at Garth again.
So I thought this was interesting, pivoting a little bit. I'm sure everybody listening knows Chris Robinson. Once upon a time, he's part of a band called The Black Crowes. We'll jog your memory here. He did this song. And the band also cut this song. Chris Robinson recently interviewed by Howard Stern. Now, Stern, I don't know how he gets things out of the folks that he's talking. I don't know how he gets the things that he does, but he just has a way about him.
He makes them comfortable.
He makes them very comfortable and
takes them off guard.
After they're comfortable, they're put on the spot, and because they were comfortable initially, they feel compelled to answer, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, like so many of Stern's interviews, is a conversation with Robinson made headlines, among other things. He said that he hated his brother, who was also in the Black Crowes.
Yeah, I was going to say, they were in the band together.
Yeah, told a story about how Greg Allman told him off in the early 90s and spoke about playing on stage with Jimmy Page, playing Led Zeppelin songs with Jimmy Page. They cut an album together. But what I want to focus on is what he said about John Mayer. And he said this. We'll take a listen.
I'm not a big John Mayer fan. No.
No? Why?
I mean, it's like Jerry Garcia is a hero of mine.
Right.
Everything that Jerry Garcia ever talked about or stood for is John Mayer's the antithesis.
Wonderful guitar player.
He knows all the licks. There's nothing unique about his playing. Jerry was one of the most unique musicians in the world. Jerry never played anyone else's licks. Now here's John Mayer playing everyone else's licks.
So it bothers you.
It doesn't bother me. I just don't have anything to do with it.
What he's talking about here is a lack of originality. Robinson's point of view is that, yes, John Mayer can play the guitar. And even you could maybe even say he can play very well.
Can't argue with that.
But his point is that it's all been done before. He has studied and he has copied. Lord knows he's taken a move or two from Stevie Ray Vaughan. That said, I don't know if you agree with it or not. I don't know if I agree with it or not. My question to you is, what is it that makes an artist original?
It's a really tough question. It's just like what you asked earlier about the voice thing. And I think for him to even compare him to Stevie Ray Vaughan, knowing John Mayer and that John Mayer is a diehard Stevie Ray Vaughan fan,
yeah.
I think John Mayer would be thrilled to know that anyone compares him to Stevie Ray Vaughan.
But nobody wants to be anything but original. As self-conscious as John Mayer is, I don't think he wants to be.
I still think he would be honored by that, though, that you could even confuse him with him. But so what makes you original, I think, is no one's truly original. Everyone's doing stuff that's been done before.
Of course.
I think Hendrix was pretty original, but I bet even then you could point to guys. I'm sure there were guitar guys standing around going, well, he ripped that off of so-and-so. And I know he did take some things from, like, the Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top. I guess Hendrix said he liked the way he played. And, Neil Young was doing some good things on guitar back then. There were a lot of guys that were good guitar players back then, Jeff Beck and whoever else you want to name. But so I think you're always taking a mix of things.
So,
you make it your own, and John Mayer's voice, I think, is what really separates him from a lot of guys. I don't think he sounds like anyone else when he sings.
Let me ask you this. Obviously, John Mayer is playing with the Grateful Dead right now. Was Jerry Garcia an original-sounding guitarist in your mind's eye?
I'm not a huge Deadhead. I've listened to, like, three albums by them.
Yeah, that's about what I've got.
And I like them.
Yeah.
I like a lot of their music. I like their songwriting. But I never, when I've listened to them, I haven't been, like, enamored with listening to Jerry Garcia.
Right.
Like, he doesn't steal the show for me, so I don't really get it.
Right.
So I'm not sure. I'm not a guitar guy either, so I don't really know, like, what made him original. But So, no, to me, he's not, like, the greatest guitar player or anything.
Does he sound copy and paste?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
I think I can definitely identify Jerry Garcia when I hear one of his solos.
I mean, John Mayer. Does John Mayer to you seem like, he lifted that from, you know, he's playing the same?
I don't feel that way.
Okay.
I feel like sometimes in some of his solos, he does sound a lot like Stevie Ray Vaughan. And I've listened to Stevie Ray Vaughan's one of those guys who I've got his entire catalog at home and listened to it many times.
Yeah, Stevie Ray Vaughan, he goes for these peaks, you know, that are just so, I mean.
There'll be note runs that he'll play that are the same ones that Vaughn played.
Absolutely.
There's a tone also.
There is a tone, and I think they go, but I do think they go for those same peaks. I think they go for that same, that peak in the solo. They're seeking out similar territory, or he's seeking out similar territory to what Stevie Ray Vaughan did.
But I've always thought Mayer was a pretty original guy. I mean, I think what makes you original is, do you take chances? And Mayer has always, I feel like, taken chances.
True.
He's changed his sound several times.
Yeah.
I didn't really care for the stuff that he was doing on his first record. That's not really for me. But the Continuum stuff, I love.
Love Continuum.
The Try record, I really love. And it sounds nothing like that.
No.
And the new stuff he's been doing, I feel like, doesn't sound like anything he's done before also.
Yeah.
So it's... To be original, you gotta always be seeking something new. I think,
of course, the great irony,
your own path.
Yeah,
you know,
the great irony in all of this is that it's Chris Robinson criticizing John Mayer, and I have always felt like the Black Crowes were the most classic sounding, you know, Southern rock band.
That's all they were. They were they sounded like a bar band.
Exactly.
Trying to play. Allman Brothers stuff.
Exactly. They were cut right down the middle between the Allman Brothers and 38 Special. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, tell me.
Oh, sure. And even Skinner.
Yeah.
That's the thing with the Black Crowes. They're like
they're not
almost like a cover band.
They're not trailblazers.
Yeah.
You know,
that's weird. That's the pot calling the kettle black. but that's an insult to Mayer to say that because I think Mayer is original. I would consider him an original artist. Do you not think he's an original artist?
You know, I think he is an original artist. He doesn't always line up with you know, what I'm seeking, but that probably proves that he's an original artist, you know, because it's
you don't
not,
know what to expect.
You don't know what to expect. I don't think his new stuff is as cutting edge as it's being touted. I think it's very similar territory to what he's done before, and that's cool.
You think so?
I do, yeah. Okay. I mean, and that's cool. I mean, it's not... It's not radical, but it's let's not call it radical. I mean, it's
I would never use that word to describe John.
No,
I would never say he's radical,
and I wouldn't say this is a change. You know, he said, "Well, this is a tone. It represents the best way I can do in all these different areas." That's what the record is called, "The Search for Everything."
It's like an ongoing record, right?
Well, now it's done.
Oh, it's done now.
So
okay,
the completed record is finished, and it is out. And it's noted for its quote unquote diversity in the songs, and there are good songs on it. I mean, he is a talented songwriter. There's no doubt about it. But you can't say it's too much different than what he was doing before.
I haven't listened to the whole thing.
You can't do it, and it's not it doesn't reach the heights that something like Continuum did. I love that record. Hit me in a very particular way. Still does. And this one just is talented as he is and as good as he is. Didn't move me like that, you know.
But I haven't listened to him and thought, like, this guy is unoriginal. Like, he sounds like whoever. That's not what I feel when I think – when I listen to John Mayer. I don't feel like he is a big-time copycat, but
– There are
the
times –
the only guy that I do hear when I listen to him is Stevie Ray Vaughan sometimes, but that's not all the time. It's just sometimes.
I don't think as an artist he's a throwback. I don't think he's a revivalist, though there are times when he clearly goes old school when he's playing. I mean, that's there. But to your point, when you factor that into the total package, because he's not just a guitar player, right? He's not just a soloist. He's not just, whatever. I mean, you got to look at everything put together. You got to look at the whole picture.
Sure.
And, I do think he's original. I do. And that's why I kind of disagreed with what Chris Robinson was saying, because the Black Crowes, again, I like some of their stuff. But they were not. They weren't trailblazers.
Not original, at all.
Let's try this on. Stevie Van Zandt of Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band recently gave a speech at a commencement at where else? Rutgers University in New Jersey. So here's a little bit of the speech that he gave to the graduates.
summing up, what have I learned in this crazy life? A few things might come in handy. When your ship comes in, you'll probably be at the airport. I mean, you can make all the plans you want, but keep your eyes open for unexpected opportunities, because that's where most of life comes from. Keep your standards high, no matter what.
This comes as he's getting ready to release a brand new record. In fact, I think it is available now. Here's a song entitled Saint Valentine's Day. But I want to go back to the speech. He said something that was interesting. Listen to this.
And when it comes to art, slow down. It's not a math problem. Let the senses soak it in.
One more time.
And when it comes to art, slow down. It's not a math problem. Let the senses soak it in.
Clint, we live in a hot take society. Everybody needs a hot take in the spirit, and truly in the spirit of Overdue Review. How important is it to soak in art before you start to label it and put it in its place? Your thoughts.
Now, this work, I think it's a double-edged sword for Stevie, which, by the way, how great would it be to have little Steven?
Do you think they knew who he was?
Probably not.
Do you think
I bet there were 10 guys that knew who he was.
The kids at Rutgers knew who Stevie was. 10
kids
Stevie
knew who
was.
He was, and right. They were going nuts. Like, they were, like, waiting afterward to get his autograph.
Yeah.
But with the Disciples of Soul record,
I'd be shit.
Sign or something.
Yeah.
I know, me too.
Yeah.
We'd be going crazy. Sopranos DVD box
sets.
Oh, jeez. So anyway, this is a double-edged sword. So this works, I guess, for loving art and hating it, because we've all heard a song first time on the radio and we like loved it, couldn't get out of
what
our heads.
What is this? What is
just
this?
Thought, it was fantastic. Yeah. And then maybe you heard it again
like
a week later
and
you didn't think it was so good. And you're like, it's like, what happened that first time you heard it? Why did you think it was so great? Because clearly it sucked.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, this is a good point from little Steven here. There is some kind of joy, though, in just hearing something or watching a movie for the first time and just loving it and raving about it.
I think
there's something really cool about that. We all overanalyze. I think Steven Van Zandt definitely comes off to me as one of those guys who probably overanalyzes everything he does.
Yeah.
He is a thinking man for sure.
A Renaissance
and that
man.
And that hurts sometimes. You know, sometimes it is just better to just let go and just enjoy whatever it is you're doing and just
don't classify it. Don't label it. Don't review it. Don't just enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I do think he's got a point. So I would rather let something soak in. But I think you and I, we like to criticize things. We write about things on the website.
Yeah.
So we do subscribe to that. But there's something great about just watching it, experiencing it for the first time.
This is the thought that I had. When I heard his speech, how many times have we heard a record that you know what, the first time you hear it, it's okay, but 3 months later, it's all you're listening to?
Do you ever do that?
Tons
of times.
Some of my favorite records. I know we've talked about Bob Dylan a lot tonight, but his record called Oh Mercy.
Yeah,
I listened to it the first time and I was totally underwhelmed. I thought, I don't know. But now it's like, I mean, it's in my top five of my favorite records of it.
I love that album.
I could listen to it every day, but it wasn't that way initially. It had to grow on me.
And at Oh Mercy, I think I liked a little bit more the first time I listened to it, but for me, Shot of Love was that way. First time I listened to it, I didn't love it, but then it has become one of my all-time favorites. Yeah.
I mean, are there other records to you that you feel like, you know, over time, there's just something that...
Springsteen's Tunnel of Love is that way for me. I didn't love it the first time I listened to it because I wasn't expecting it to sound that way.
Yeah.
It was a little too – it sounded too dated for me, but now that's one of the things I like about it.
Yeah.
Is that it has that drum machine kind of like thing going on.
Yeah.
And it just sounds
– almost like a ticking clock or something, you know, the drum machine has.
Even the song Tunnel of Love, the first time I ever heard that song was not on the record. It was on A Greatest Hits.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's, like, mixed up with all these, you know, great songs. Like, I think it always comes right after, like,
They'll
have
USA
Glory
stuff.
Days. Yeah, so you'll hear Glory Days, and it's this great rock and bar song. And then you go to Tunnel of Love, and it's like this bizarre fat man sitting on a little stool.
It's a little more heavily produced, ironically, because I think he did it himself, which is, you know.
And I didn't like it that much. But then when I listened to the record, I'm like, this is great, man. This is fantastic stuff. So it happens to me a lot with albums, actually.
Well, let me ask you this. Steve Van Zandt obviously gave the commencement speech we were just talking about. Will Ferrell gave a speech this year. We're going to play for you part of a speech that Jim Carrey gave at a graduation a year or two ago.
My father could have been a great comedian, but he didn't believe that that was possible for him. And so he made a conservative choice. Instead, he got a safe job as an accountant. And when I was 12 years old, he was let go from that safe job. And our family had to do whatever we could to survive. I learned many great lessons from my father, not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
This is not an uncommon thing, but who in your mind is overdue to give a commencement speech at a graduation? My answer is Willie Nelson. Now look at this. Natalie, hold on. Checks all the boxes. Somebody you want to hear from. Long life. Check. Unique aspirations. Check. Humor. Check. Worldliness. Check. And the dude is freaking resilient. What was it? A few years ago, he was in debt, hundreds of millions, tens of millions of dollars to the IRS, and now he has turned it around. I want to hear about that type of resilience before I head out into the freaking real world.
One of the most accomplished guys, too, in music,
absolutely,
regardless of genre, and a universally loved guy by people in all genres.
Exactly.
People that don't even like country music, they like Willie Nelson.
Absolutely.
Even if they don't know his music, they like him. They think he's cool. He's like, he's the weed guy, and he's, you know, he's got the radio station, and he's cool, man.
Absolutely.
He's just like, he's a cool guy.
Absolutely.
So, that's
he's
a good pick.
He's up there. I put Randy Newman up there, too. I think Randy Newman would be fun.
Randy Newman would probably be good, especially right now with all the politics that he could carve up. I'd like to hear him do a new record.
It'd be freaking brilliant. Also, anyway.
The guy for me would probably be Dr. Dre. I think he would give a hell of a commencement speech. Kids still know him, so they would like to hear from him. Very accomplished career, not only in music but business. I mean, you're talking about a billionaire with a B, because not because of the songs he wrote and produced, because of the headphones that he put his name on.
Yeah,
isn't that incredible that were bought by Apple? I mean, that's what I want to hear about when I'm talking about Dr. Dre. I mean, here's a guy who can tell you about why selling out is not such a bad thing. You know, it might free you up to do some really great work, which he hasn't done much work. He's the notorious perfectionist in all of music.
Yeah.
He's been working on the same record for about 15 years now. But, yeah, I'd love to hear from Dr. Dre at my graduation.
Absolutely.
I think that would be fantastic.
Absolutely. That's a good answer. So, as you guys know, we are building the most perfect playlist known to man. Each week, I give you five more songs to stream, to download, to whatever, to add your whatever method of madness you have chosen. You add it to our growing Stream Police playlist, which is available. We always have to remind folks, if you ever want to listen to it, put it on shuffle. You've had a hard day at the office. Put our playlist on shuffle on the way home, and you'll have good company. So I always give
it's
you...
It's on Spotify, and it's quite
it's
big
on,
now.
It's on Spotify.
It's a
we've got
playlist.
I mean, how many songs are on it now? Do you know?
I mean, we've got. I'm not sure, but it's pretty long.
We have got a bunch of songs, but...
I can tell you right now, it is... up to 136 songs. That's 9 hours of listening for
you.
There
you go.
And that's not every song. You have had a
that'll
few
you
that you've picked.
Yeah, that'll get you through a work day.
It will, yeah. You've had a few that you picked that aren't actually on Spotify, so they weren't able to be put on the list there. But,
right.
But it's a hell of a playlist at this point.
So anyway, I gave you five songs at the end of every at the end of my segment, and I did the greatest TV themes. Okay. The greatest TV show theme song of all time this week. Clint let me take the reins there during his segment. I'm going to let Clint take the reins here at the end of my music segment, and Clint himself is going to give you five songs to check out this week, and we are going to add these to the Most Perfect Playlist Known to Man, which, again, is up as we speak on Spotify, so check it out. Clint.
If you search Stream Police, you will find it, by the way.
All right.
Thank you, Andy. By the way, this talk about an honor.
Oh, God.
I called my mom I mean, I called people. I called old teachers that I haven't talked to since I was in high school. I mean, just couldn't believe it when you offered me the chance to do the five songs for the most perfect playlist known to man.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take full advantage of this. I'm going to give you. Now, don't take this as these are like my five favorite songs of all time.
No, I don't even think
these are five. Just these are kick-ass songs.
They
make great additions to the playlist.
They're speaking to you at this moment. I don't even think my favorite songs are even part of the playlist. They're just whatever I was feeling as I was putting this thing together. That's what ended up, you know, being recommended.
That's the way you do it. All right, I'm going to start you off here. My first of the five.
Let's hear it.
A little tune by Rush, the Canadian trio, called Between the Wheels, which I think is the best song that they ever recorded. I think it's the crowning. I think it is the crowning moment in Rush's entire career.
Yeah.
A rock and roll Hall of Fame career. Yeah. Between the Wheels, it doesn't get any better than this for me. It's got the great lyric in it. You can go from Rocket's Red Glare to Brother, Can You Spare? I mean, one of the best. I think it's the best. I think it's the best lyrics Neil Peart ever wrote. He's not a great lyricist, I don't think, but this song's fantastic. Yeah. So here you go. Between the Wheels by Rush.
Let's hear it.
All right, number two, I'm going to check in with one of my favorite. I think this woman embodies, like, everything that has been missing from rock and roll for just really since probably the 90s. I mean, since the Chris Cornell days. I'm going to go with Pedestrian at Best by Courtney Barnett, who was nominated for a Grammy last year for Best New Artist a couple years ago.
I
listened to her first record, and I just fell in love with it. I love her accent. She's Australian. Yeah. She's got this great singing accent. And then I saw her on SNL, and I fell in love even more because she's just such like a legitimate badass.
Oh, yeah. She doesn't give a shit.
And that is the thing, man. Yeah. And she's just so far from commercial.
Yeah.
And this song I love because it's so funny and so raw at the same time. And the characters in her songs, like all of her songs, are just so cool. They're like characters you would love to hang out with and spend a day with.
That's her thing, I think. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, does she have a newer record?
She just put a new single out.
Okay. I thought
she doesn't have a new album out yet. I don't think. But
her whole thing is like, you know, character sketches.
That's what she does.
She is.
And she's gifted at it.
She's a good writer.
This one has the great lyric. I think you're a joke, but I don't find you very funny. Which is one of the most. That's an insult that'll just cut somebody right down. And she's no doubt talking to some man in this song.
I love it.
So there you go. Pedestrian at Best by Courtney Barnett. Right, staying kind of in the same, not the same genre, really not even the same ballpark as Courtney Barnett, but
so what the hell are you talking about?
The same time frame, okay?
Okay.
A newer artist.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Tame Impala, which I think Tame Impala actually is Australian also.
New
Person, Same Old Mistakes is the song I'm going to go with by Tame Impala. This was from his second album. And this was an artist that I feel like really grew after a very good debut record that I really liked a lot. Second album came out, and it was just like way better and way different. I mean, totally changed the sound, grew up a lot. And this track actually was covered by Rihanna for her Anti album. And she changed the name of the song, but it was the exact same song. Everything was the same. But she called it Same Old Mistakes and did a really good cover of it. But I'm going to go with the original, Tame Impala, New Person, Same Old Mistakes. All right, speaking of Rihanna, let's go with somebody that she's worked with.
You know I'm a fan.
And somebody that she has been romantically involved with on and off in the past.
Is this by me? Or did you pick one of my...
One of your great tunes.
Did you pick one of my tunes?
I'm sorry, Seth. Like, I was trying to keep that secret, but I didn't think you wanted that out there.
Well.
I'm going with Drake here.
Okay.
Drake, who has one of the... Despite a guy who's really only been around for about 10 years in the music world, he has one of the deepest catalogs of
album every freaking year.
Puts an album out every 2 weeks, I feel like. I mean, this guy never stops working. But I'm going to go with a track from probably his best album, Nothing Was the Same. This song, Furthest Thing, I just love this song. Since the first time I've heard it, I've loved it. And it's one of those songs that just kicks your ass when the beat finally comes in. Like, it takes a while for the beat to come in, and then when it does... Unbelievable. So, Furthest Thing by Drake.
What more can I say now? What more can I say now? You might feel like nothing was the same. I still been drinking on the low, mobbing on the low, fucking on the low, smoking on the low. I still been plotting on the low, scheming on the low. The furthest thing from perfect, like everyone I know. I just been drinking on the low, mobbing on the low, fucking on the low. Smoking on the low, I just been plotting on the low, scheming on the low, the furthest thing from perfect, like everyone I know.
All right, and I mentioned them earlier before. One of my absolute favorite bands of all time. I think more millennials need to get into them. Steely Dan has my final track here. Everyone's Gone to the Movies is the track I'm going to pick from Steely Dan. Because only Steely Dan, this is the beauty of Steely Dan. Steely Dan famously never wrote a love song. They're the only band ever. That's the thing. They've never had a single song on any of their records that's a love song. Like no songs about being in love, romance, nothing like that.
Nope.
Only Steely Dan could write a song about an old guy who shows porn movies to little kids and make it into this bouncy sing-along. But that's exactly what this song's about. You're singing along with it. You're loving it. And then you listen to the lyrics and you're like,
you say, oh, wait.
Oh, my God. What am I talking about?
Oh, hold on.
So Everyone's Gone to the Movies by Steely Dan. I love it. Now We're Alone at Last. So there's five, but Andy, if you'll indulge me, I don't get to do this often. No, so I want to throw a.
You can do ten if you want.
Oh, geez, you should have told me that earlier. I'm gonna do a sixth song here.
Okay.
Because we were talking earlier about the late great Chris Cornell, I felt like I needed to throw in a song by him, and I'm gonna pick my favorite vocal that Chris Cornell ever cut, and that is "Hunger Strike" by Temple of the Dog.
That's a great.
Love this song. The story behind it is so good too, because Eddie Vedder was like an unknown. Chris Cornell was kind of a big time guy, and this kid Eddie Vedder was in the studio hanging out, and he let him come on and do vocal, and it turns out to be Chris Cornell and Eddie Vedder doing a duet together, which is just mind blowing to think about. And in the 1990s, so Hunger Strike. I'll never get tired of this.
Phenomenal.
Song. In honor of the late great Chris Cornell. I gave you six for the price of five today, Andy.
All right. Big round of applause in the studio, please.
Of course, Facebook Live can see the studio audience is a little thin today, but that's all right.
But they're all sitting behind us.
You can't see us.
Yeah, you can't see them.
Can't see them.
It's only a one camera shoot.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, those are all great tunes, man. Great tunes.
I think you'll like Between the Wheels a lot.
I know that you know your shit, and that's why I was excited to hand the reins over to you.
Well, thank you, sir. I do my best.
Absolutely.
Hopefully they'll live up to your other picks.
Oh, shoot.
Check it out, man. Check it out at the Spotify. Just search Stream Police. I'm sure it's the first thing that'll come up for you. And the ever-growing greatest podcast, or greatest playlist known to man on the greatest podcast
of course.
Known to man, I think. All right. So anything else, Andy?
No, that's it, my man.
Okay, cool.
That's it.
One more. I had one more question for you.
Come on.
I'm going to save. I was going to talk about a couple of other shows, but I'm going to save those for next time because we've already been going on for a while here.
Have we hit the 3-hour mark? Where are we at? Where are we at?
We're only at 2 hours, 45 minutes now. We're about 2 hours in. So I'm going to give you.
There's no way anybody listens to those old fucking things.
We'll see. We'll see.
No way they're going to listen to 2 hours.
Maybe our moms. They might check it out.
They might.
We'll find out.
Maybe. We'll find out how much they do care.
Yeah. I've come to a realization.
Yeah.
In the last couple of years. And while you're here, I wanted to ask you if you have this realization.
Okay.
For a long time, I would hear the term movie snob.
Ugh.
And I would hear people say that. And you hear it for other things too, beer snob, whatever. You can throw it on anything.
Sure.
I would hear that term and I would say, I'm not a movie snob. Like, I know I'm not because I watch a little bit of everything. Like, last week on the show, I talked about the Austin Powers movies. I love the Austin Powers movies. I don't think any self-respecting movie snob would say that they love the Austin Powers movies.
No.
I mean, come on.
No.
But I have come to the realization in the last few years that I think I am a movie snob. I think I have always been one, and I just didn't realize it. Because I have found myself many times people recommending movies to me, telling me I need to see something. And
you're thinking.
I'm immediately writing it off to think about like the next acclaimed like performance from James Dean that I never got to watch.
Yeah. Or,
like I'm valuing older movies more than I do new movies sometimes, and that's not a fair thing to do because just because they're old doesn't mean they're better. We know that.
And just because they're newer doesn't mean they're less than.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But sometimes you know we do fall into that. And I think about directors' track records. I think about actors, and you know I'm not just thinking about does this movie look good from the trailer. I got to think about all these things first.
Right. So here's my question to you, and it's one question, and however you answer it, this will dictate whether or not you are a movie snob, is that do you look down and judge other people because of their taste in movies?
I don't do that.
Then I don't think you're a movie snob.
You don't think I'm there yet?
I don't think you are. Now I
honestly don't do that.
You may be on your way.
Okay.
But I don't think you're there yet.
I do sometimes
That is the qualifier, in my opinion.
I do sometimes find myself going, like, in the wintertime when all the great award season movies come out and somebody says they went to the movies and they went and saw, like, the new Transformers movies when they could have gone and seen, you know, like, one of the great movies that's in theaters at the time. I do find myself going, like, you know, why would you waste? Why would you give more money to a Michael Bay movie when you could have spent your hard-earned dollar on this?
That's disappointment.
Yeah.
But it's not like you son of a bitch.
Yeah, I don't think they're stupid or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I get why they did it because the hype's there because it's the thing to go to. They want to have something to talk to, talk about with other people.
Right.
It's easier to digest.
Yeah.
I like to watch movies that are hard to watch, and I know a lot of people don't like that.
Right.
They want to escape, but I don't always
want to escape. I feel like you may be a little hard on yourself. Why do you feel like you are a movie snob?
Because, like I said, I won't just run out and see a movie because it's making a lot of money at the box office.
Yeah.
Whereas
are you
a lot
skeptical
of
people do. Is it skepticism?
I don't think even that. It's just I don't have interest a lot of times. Something about the film itself has to interest me. Someone behind it, someone writing it, someone directing it, someone acting in it, a track record, the theme of the movie. Something has to really pull me in because I feel like I have too many things.
I think that just may make you informed, you know.
All right. Well, it makes me feel a little bit better about myself. But I was going to ask you if you're a music snob.
You know,
have you wrestled with this?
Yeah.
Because you know music snobs.
My wife would tell you that I am, and she is quick to tell me that I am, but I don't feel like I am, and I recognize that everybody uses music in different ways, and I also recognize that I'm really, really into it, you know, so I'm going to consume it in a different fashion than maybe the guy down the hall will consume it. And that doesn't make him wrong, you know? Like, it just, it doesn't, you know? However, that being said, I also know that there is, you know, a strong connection to be made with songs and albums and artists. And there is frustration from time to time when... See, I got to be careful here, otherwise it's going to sound like I'm a music snob. I think...
But are you?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Or am I in denial? I don't know. I don't think so. Because what I was
heard you give props to some music that no music snob would ever give props
That's what
to.
I'm saying. I'm a freaking Meatloaf fan.
Yeah, you I mean, love Meatloaf.
Who the hell, if you're really, and that's the other thing too, man. I think that music snobs have like benchmarks and qualifications. And I don't have that when I listen to music. You know, I mean,
you give it all a chance?
Yeah, I mean, is
that's
it,
all that you can do, right?
Is it good? Is it well-rounded? Do you sense that there's, you know, effort in it? Do you sense that it's genuine? But it's not, but, you know, I think there are, like, quite literal qualifications that some people have that judge whether or not it's genuine music.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think it has anything to do with production values or the sound necessarily of the music or the way that you write or that it was, you know, written in, you know, Vancouver or way, you know, I mean, some people, I'm serious. Some people have like,
yeah.
Well, unless it was, you know, anything after 72 was dog shit. Like there are people like that.
You're right. Yeah.
And I don't do that. So I don't feel like I am.
I got to say, I've known you a long time.
Yeah.
And you're the most knowledgeable person about music that I know.
Yeah.
That I've ever met. And it's one of the things I've always liked about you. I've never considered you to be a music snob, ever.
I have never thought
that about you because, like I said, I've heard you give credit and give a chance to a lot of music that a lot of people would say is shitty just without even hearing it.
Oh, shit.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that automatically makes you not a music snob. I think you do have high standards
That is true. And, you know, so I think, you know, where the criticism comes, like, okay, the wife and I will be in the car, right? And we'll just be driving, and a Nicki Minaj song comes on. And I really liked her at first, but, man, now it gives me a freaking migraine. You know, I just can't – we have fallen out of love, man. If I never heard it again, that'd be too soon.
It's not mutual because she says she still likes the Stream Police.
See, she
still likes you.
Life is tough. Life is tough. And it's not fair. But you know, so that'll come on. And I'm just like, this is such bullshit. You know, I mean, you could clearly tell that she's trying to do this. You could clearly tell that she's going for this. You could clearly see all these things, you know, that makes it feel so obvious.
Yep.
And she's like, you know, and I'm being told, you're just a music snob.
You sound like an asshole.
You're being snobby about this. You know, it's a pop song. But I'm thinking, no, you know what? You can really connect with a pop song. And here's the problem with this particular pop song.
And you break it down.
And I break it down.
And now, some people just don't want it to be broken
down. I think, yeah, I'm not sure if the explanation isn't as tactful as what it maybe could be. But no, I don't think I am. Does that make me a music snob?
You're not.
Okay.
You're not.
All right.
You've just heard a lot. You know what you think is good. And I mean, sometimes there is a definition of good, I think, and bad.
Yeah.
What makes something good and bad? It's not always subjective. I think there are some things that are just good.
Yeah.
And there are some things that are just bad.
I think the way that you can tell that is you can recognize, okay, that is good music. Maybe not my cup of tea, but I see that this is, you know,
I can see why people go nuts about this.
I can see this qualifies. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I don't think either of us are snobs. Maybe we're both in denial, but. But I have wrestled with it. I've thought about it.
And yeah.
Is it such a bad thing to be? It probably is because I think the word means that you're discounting things before you've even given them a chance. That's when you become a snob.
I think that's exactly right.
So
you're writing things off before you've ever had that one-on-one, you know, experience.
And that's exactly what Steven Van Zandt said not to do.
Exactly.
Right. He said even if you have heard something, don't write it off. you gotta listen to it and then think about it a lot.
Let it soak in. Let it percolate.
Then you can write it off. Exactly.
Let it marinate before you put a label on it.
And Steven's a guy that I might consider. He could be a music snob. I don't know.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. Yeah.
You know? He's probably a guy I don't think I'd want to talk music with. He'd probably just he'd be intimidating first off, and he'd probably look down on you a little
bit. Yeah, I'm just afraid he'd roll his eyes. You know, like I'm afraid like I'd testify and I'd pour my heart out and I'd, you know, hey, this is what I believe about music and rock and roll music and, you know, all this stuff. And he'd just be like, okay, that's cute.
That's great.
That's my, like, that's
I gotta
that's,
go see you.
Yeah, that's my my worst nightmare.
That would be sad, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'd be like, oh God, I'm a loser.
All right. Well, the last thing I'm gonna leave you guys with here, as I always do, a couple things that are streaming right now, one on Netflix, one on Amazon for you. And these movies, you might be considered these movie snob movies, all right? These are not movies of the people, but they're great films. They're both on Netflix and Amazon right now. First off, on Netflix, The Place Beyond the Pines from 2012. Have you ever seen this, Andy?
I've seen parts of it. I haven't seen the whole thing.
You need to spend some time with it. I think you'd really like it. It is such an epic movie, and that word gets thrown around a lot, but this is a true, like one of those 1970s ensemble epics that you would see back in the day, like a Nashville or something like that. It's not set in the music industry, but it's this movie about fathers and sons, and it's set over this 30-year span. And it's got Bradley Cooper, and it's got Ryan Gosling in it. And so when you hear that cast, you're kind of like, well, it probably can't be that heavyweight, but it is a heavyweight.
Oh, no.
It's a very good movie.
No,
both of them are very strong in this film, and it's just a really – it's a great movie about fathers and sons. I reviewed it at Overdue Review after I first saw it, so back in 2012, a long time ago. And you can read my thoughts there. I think I gave it 4.5 stars.
Yeah.
And I still love this movie. Still holds up. It's about 3 hours long, so pace yourself. But it's on Netflix now and definitely worth your watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Amazon, one for you, Manchester by the Sea, which came out last year.
Loved it.
And, yeah, did you like this
Loved
one?
Loved it.
It was a really – it's a powerful movie. And I think this one gets – a lot. It got some bad press, not only because of the Casey Affleck stuff, which is, you know, that's awful on its own front, but the movie itself got some bad press because people were like, well, it's like this depressing thing. But this movie is not that depressing. I feel like it's so funny.
I didn't feel like it was depressing at all.
Yeah.
I mean,
it doesn't have a lot of life in it. And
just because it's, you know, dark and depressing are not necessarily the same thing.
No.
You
it's
know?
Sad.
It is sad.
It's a sad movie, but it's so funny at times.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the interaction between, the teen and Casey Affleck. I can't remember. What's the kid's name?
Do you remember the kid's name? Lucas something.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Yeah.
But they're.
Oh, you're talking about the actor's name.
The
character's name.
The character. Well, either or. Yeah. I can't think of it.
The actor's name is Lucas something. I can't remember what his last name is.
But anyway, those two play off each other phenomenally well. I mean, that is really funny. It can, you know, in parts, it's really funny stuff.
It really is, yeah. And it does have some heavy stuff in it. But yeah, it's a really funny movie.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of life in it. And I think the thing that I love about Manchester by the Sea, and something that a lot of people don't know about this movie, is the guy who directed it. Kenneth Lonergan, he is like, apparently he's famous for the way he makes his movies is that everything is scripted. Everything you see in the movie is scripted. He does not allow any improv of any kind. He doesn't even allow you to say or like it. If you say or and it wasn't scripted, he cuts the scene and then you go back and you do it again. He's like Casey Affleck described it as like doing a symphony. And like being part of a symphony, and this guy, he wrote every beat into the music. Yeah. And when the characters overlap, like when they talk over each other, it's scripted at
exactly
that moment
how it needed
when
to
they
sound.
Talk
yeah.
over each other. Like he won't let you get away with anything. So
can you imagine what that script must look like?
Oh, I couldn't imagine.
I mean, how freaking thick would that have to be? I mean, how much time and text would you have to devote to just, you know, some of the minor
the rehearsals
things?
Had to be just so
oh,
long.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things when you watch this movie, you'll be really impressed by is that everything that happens scripted. None of it is, Lucas Hedges is the kid's name,
Lucas
by the way.
Lucas Hedges, yeah.
And none of it was unscripted. So it's a really just detailed movie. It's a great film about loss and about, you know, life and family and kind of being forced to spend time with family that you otherwise maybe you don't really want to spend any time with, but you know you have to, and you try to make the best of it.
Right.
And it's a really great little blue collar Boston movie.
It's,
so
it's a slice of life movie too.
Big time.
It's made to feel authentic
for sure.
You know,
and Michelle Williams very good in that. She got nominated for an Oscar basically for one scene in the film. It's a really powerful scene. So Manchester by the Sea right now is on Amazon. It was produced by Amazon, so that's why they're the only ones that are going to have that one. So there you go. That's going to do it for another joint episode here, man.
Whew, this thing, speaking of epic.
I'm telling you.
God.
This Place Beyond the Pines kind of epic here.
Huge show.
Oh, man. So, yes, good to get together with you. Good to shoot the shit a little bit longer, man.
We have a great fucking time.
No doubt.
A great time.
Let's go get some beers.
All right, man.
Thank you guys very much for listening. Thank you for watching. If you did on Facebook Live, much appreciated. And we will read some comments. And thank you guys very much.
Yeah.
Good to be with you. I'm Clint Davis, the movies and TV editor at Overdue Review.
And I'm Andy Sedlak, the music editor at OverdueReview.com.
Check us out there on the website and reach out to us at theclintdavis@gmail.com.
Is sedlakjournal@gmail.com. My last name is spelled Sedlak. And then the word journal@gmail.com.
All right, friends. We'll talk to you next time. And take it easy. Until then, stream on.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.